Rob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Sorry about the hooky. Sorry about the absence, but it wasn't hooky. It was work that needed doing. It turns out that I went further away than I thought I was going. I thought I was just going down to a little place. Well, and it's my fault for not knowing. No, I wound up going to a very, very special place. A little bit to the north and west of Knoxville. I went to the Highlander Center for a meeting. And what a special place that is. If you don't know about the Highlander Center, you're missing out on a big part of some of the most important history made in this country in regard to the advancement of human rights. The Highlander Center was founded in the 30s by a pair of men. As a means of teaching, it was based upon a Dutch concept of rural educational, rural schools to teach farmers and so forth the basics of reading, writing, arithmetic, the works. And along the way, teaching them how to stand up for themselves. Using this model, Don West and Miles Horton built the Highlander School and operated it along similar philosophical lines. Transitioning in the late 40s and early 50s, into teaching and nurturing the young civil rights movement. The Highlander School is the place where a young Martin Luther King Jr. and other members of SNCC came, as well as a then young seamstress from Montgomery by the name of Rosa Parks to learn organizing tactics that they would go on and use to rock this nation, to change this nation, to challenge the entrenched notions of power that existed at that time in this nation. For that, the Highlander School, which is now known as the Highlander Center, was tormented by red baiters. I had an opportunity to view a laminated blow-up of a four-page news article spread talking about the communists of the Highlander School in East Tennessee. Eventually, the powers that be in East Tennessee went so far as to plant moonshine on the grounds of the Highlander Center and use that as the pretext to shut them down. Their current location has been their home since the early 70s. Nonetheless, upon arriving there and walking around and listening listening to the song of cicadas in the still East Tennessee night, I was reminded of that passage from the Bible. Sorry, it's the idiom in which I was raised. In which Moses, having fled Egypt, stands before a burning bush. And a voice from the bush commands, "Remove your sandals, Moses, for you are on holy ground." And that verse reverberated and resonated inside me as I walked around the campus of the Highlander Center. They've got their own apple orchard. You might recall that our good buddy Kate, formerly of the desert, now of the Front Range, spent a considerable amount of time there a year or so ago doing archive work inside their library. It was a humbling experience just to be there, and a beautiful experience as well. It is a Highland Center. To stand up on the deck of the Horton House at the summit of the hill and look out over look east as far as the eye will carry you to the Smoky Mountains is to see something magnificent and to sort of feel a sense of rejuvenation. Following that, I left. And not being one for taking the same road home that I took down, I crossed the state of Tennessee and turned right just before Nashville. Passing signs for such places, but not having time to take the road felt more grievous. Passing signs for the Alvin C. York State Park and the David Crockett Birthplace. Oh, there's just tons of history all over the state of Tennessee. And stopped and passed today with my head writer and spiritual advisor, David in Tennessee. And if you don't know, if you haven't gathered by listening to this program, the closest I come to having a religion is barbecue. In that religion, ribs are a sacrament. And I'm here to tell you this evening that David in Tennessee is a high priest. And I was treated to a rack of ribs that would... It was a religious experience. And came on home and got back to work a little bit rejubimificated to deal with things like holes in gas tanks, holes in roofs, plumbing going to hell, failing transmissions. But with a little bit better mindset for doing all of that, I have to tell you. There will be more trips in the future. I anticipate a possibility of a trip toward the end of this month, which is not that far away. Possibly in solidarity with the tar sands protesters in D.C. I don't know if you've been following that, but it is a magnificent story of courage and determination. As protesters in D.C. as many as 150 were arrested in front of the White House today, protesting the torment that attends the Canadian nation in the name of more corporate profits. And that is the tar sands extraction nightmare. You know it's bad because the oil companies are running ads talking about how good it is on national television. Right? Yeah. Because if you've got a market, and we're going to get to Moran Monday. Oh, we are not going to miss Moran Monday. No. But do you remember when people started to figure out that high fructose corn syrup was terrible for your guts? And as a consequence, the hacks and flacks at the American Corn Sugar Refiners Association put out an ad saying, high fructose corn syrup is just like sugar. Why, have some of my popsicle. Like everything else, it's great in moderation. Remember that? Well, this is similar to that. It's like talking about clean coal. Blue. Craziness. Marketing that's bad for you. So when the oil companies go to market the tar sands in Canada, you know they're out to screw you pretty much, right? Yeah. Kind of put me in mind of the late, great prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him. This.
By the way, if anyone here is in advertising or marketing, kill yourself. Thank you. Just a little thought. I'm just trying to plant seeds. Maybe one day they'll take root. I don't know. You try. You do what you can. Kill yourself. Seriously, though, if you are, do. Not really. There's no rationalization for what you do, and you are Satan's little helpers, okay? Kill yourself. Seriously. You're the ruiner of all things good. Seriously. No, this is not a joke. It's going to be a joke coming. There's no fucking joke coming. You are Satan's spawn, filling the world with bile and garbage. You are fucked, and you are fucking us. Kill yourself. It's the only way to save your fucking soul. Kill yourself. Plant seeds. I know all the marketing people are going, he's doing a joke. There's no joke here whatsoever. Suck a tailpipe, fucking hang yourself, borrow a gun from a Yank friend. I don't care how you do it. Rid the world of your evil fucking machinations. Okay, whatever. You know what I mean. I know what all the marketing people are thinking right now, too. Oh, you know what Bill's doing? He's going for that anti-marketing dollar. That's a good market. He's very smart. Oh, man, I am not doing that, you fucking evil scumbags. Oh, you know what Bill's doing now? He's going for the righteous indignation dollar. That's a big dollar. A lot of people are feeling that indignation. We've done research. Huge market. He's doing a good thing. God damn it, I'm not doing that, you scumbags. Quit putting a goddamn dollar sign on every fucking thing on this planet. Ooh, the anger dollar. Huge. Huge in times of recession. Giant market. Bill's very bright to do that. God, I'm just caught in a fucking web. Ooh, the trapped dollar. Big dollar. Huge dollar. Good market. Look at our research. We see that many people feel trapped. If we play to them and separate them into the trapped dollar, how do you live like that? I bet you sleep like fucking babies at night, don't you? What'd you do tonight, honey? Oh, we made arsenic childhood food now. Good night. Yeah, we just said, you know, is your baby really too loud? You know. Yeah, the mums will love it, yeah. Sleep like fucking children, don't you? This is your world, isn't it?
Well, it may be. And, of course, peace be upon the prophet Bill Hicks. And it may be, as he said, it may be their world. But we don't have to sit still for it, do we? So when the oil companies run ads saying the tar sands will create thousands of jobs without saying that some of those tens of thousands of jobs will be in hospitals caring for people killed by tar sands extraction. Well, we know we're being marketed at, aren't we, don't we? And we know they are, like the prophet Bill Hicks said, sleeping like children, even as they poison them. But I am rejuvenated, refueled, energized, and ready for this evening. Because, my God, I take a few days away to go do some necessary business, and it's like cockroaches after the lights go out. The daggum morons are all over creation. I mean, really? Just a couple of examples. Come on, we got to do this, you know. Wouldn't be fair. It's more. I don't know. I need voting on this. You know, we grandfathered Mussolini, Caribou Barbie, Godzilla from Wasilla a good year ago. She's no longer allowed in Moran Monday because she just is one. Do we have to do the same thing with Michelle Marcus, I said no teeth, Bachman? Because it's just a flood. I offer you, for instance, not last week's program in which she wished happy birthday to Elvis on the day that he died. No, not that. Not the repeated use of U2 boat, the shaggy bagger story, speechifying over the court. No, not that. No. I mean, there's a ton of it out there, but no, there's a new one. Now, everybody, just because, I don't know, are you like me? Every once in a while you look up and go, no, really, am I? Because I'm beginning at the tender age of 48 to understand what Kurt Vonnegut, saint, was talking about, writing about, when he discussed coming unstuck in time, Pooty Wheat. I just kind of have to double-check once in a while. Ah, yeah, a new name, Palinocchio. Thank you, Texas Betsy. Nice, nice. And I heard this clip earlier today, and I went, and I had to, you know, run, check in the mirror. Yep, fat, balding, white hair, beard. Yeah, that's definitely not me 10 years ago. No, but what sent me running was this. Well, set up. So Michelle Bachman, bug spray crazy, went on Jay Sekulow's radio show. Now, Jay Sekulow, Sekulow, Smith, is a right-wing fundamentalist religion industry lawyer. And he gave her a forum, Jay did. I know how to pronounce Jay. It's probably pronounced Hermione. Yeah, God. Gave Michelle a forum to talk about, because she's just channeling this all from Jeebus, I suppose, to give her a forum to talk about what Americans are worried about. This goes back a few days.
I'm concerned about that as well.
Hang on. Audio levels aren't what I like. Okay, here we go. This is August the 18th.
People are very concerned about that as well. But what people recognize is that there's a fear that the United States is in an unstoppable decline. They see the rise of China, the rise of India, the rise of the Soviet Union. And our loss militarily going forward. And especially with this very bad debt ceiling bill, what we have done is given a saber to President Obama, and the first thing he'll whack is $500 billion out of military defense at a time when we're fighting three wars. People recognize that.
Americans are nervous about the rise of China, the rise of India, and the rise of the Soviet Union that collapsed, you know, 20 years ago, 2 decades ago. Well, 20 years minus a few couple of months, but who's counting? The rise of the Soviet Union. You know, we're talking about an idiot here. A real live goober brain. Goober being a southern euphemism for a peanut. the rise of the Soviet Union. And we're fighting three wars, I guess, presumably, in Michelle Bug Spray Crazy Bachman world. I guess the three wars we're fighting are against China, India, and the Soviet Union, right? Of course, it might be that we're fighting one less war, but then again, there are other wars that we're fighting that aren't on the books. You know, there's the nastiness in Colombia and the other, you know, the stuff in Yemen, and we're flying drones into Pakistan. But I suppose she meant Afghanistan, Iraq, and Libya. That'll be down to two shortly, it appears. Didn't support the war in Libya, and I still don't. Because I don't support wars. I'm just funny that way. This very bad debt ceiling bill. And the Soviet Union rise of it. You know, I was really tickled. I saw a story earlier today about the guy who is the head writer for Spider-Man. Wait a minute. Let's do this right. Yeah, there's a... Here we go. There, that's all better. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. Don't be shy. Get in off of the midway. Those BB gun barrels are crooked anyway, and the darts are never going to hit the balloon. Welcome, welcome, welcome to Moran Monday on the Horn. Here, behind this thin veil of cybernetic canvas, you'll hear Morans beyond the capability of human speech to describe. You'll be amazed, you'll be shocked, you'll be terrified. You might even giggle a bit. And it all comes to you dirt cheap. I gotta tell you, dirt cheap it comes to you on the Horn. For every Horn program is less than 5 cents per hour of programming. For those of you who contribute $10 a month to the Thrifty 250. Get your programs here. Bring your peanuts. Bring your popcorn. Bring your root beer. But get your program. You can't tell a moron without a program, and even with a program, you can't tell them much. That's why they're morons, and it's Moran Monday on the Horn. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in morons. And really, we're going to be busy tonight. Yes, indeed. I am told it's Sekolo, J. Sekolo. Thank you, David. Sekolo. Which I suppose is like, I don't know, an old Native American word for absolute idiot. Because the guy is one. Apparently, somewhere out there, they're giving away law licenses in Cracker Jack boxes, and, well, Jay just lucked into one. But no, I mentioned Spider-Man. You know, when you're dealing with something like a Michelle Bugspray Crazy Bachman, the civil side of one's being is frequently challenged to remain that way. And sometimes you just have to do what Brian Michael Bendis of Marvel Comics did. You see, well, there's a bit of a controversy out there. Of course, it's a non-troversy, actually, ginned up by the right wing, for the right wing, of the right wing, to get their little, IQ below freezing the foot soldiers agitated. I mean, I can only imagine that when a teabagger reads a comic book, Marvel or otherwise, that their lips move while looking at the pictures. I mean, come on, they're teabaggers. But you have to respect Brian Michael Bendis for his response to Glenn Beck. You see, it was earlier this year when Marvel Comics said that a multiracial character named Miles Morales would be the new man behind Spider-Man's red and blue mask in Ultimate Spider-Man. Think Progress reporting this. And the little monkey bats of the right wing began hopping up and down, flapping their leathery little wings, screaming about a biracial imaginary superhero. God, how I wish I was lying to you. No, they got all head up about there being a, you know, one of them behind the mask. Let's see, one right-winger tweeting, I think it's great that the new Spider-Man is black. I just hope he doesn't blame all his problems on Peter Parker. Precious, aren't they? I see stories like this, and I always think about, I think about Jerry Falwell having a fit over Tinky Winky. Let's see. Then there was this right-wing tweet. Upon hearing that a new Spider-Man might be of color, Larry's Comics, which incidentally is not a comic book shop in Alabama or Mississippi. It is a comic book store chain in New England. Larry's Comics tweeted, question, hey, Spidey, why you web-slinging so fast? Answer, KFC closing in a few minutes. I don't care who you are, it's just funny. Jesus criminy. Morons everywhere. So now, with that as prologue, I guess Glenn Beck, the Beckerhead, figured that he had enough sort of the existential space in which to begin opining about the new multiracial Spidey. He declared that it's a stupid comic book. He said that it was probably driven by Michelle Obama's agenda to change our traditions. Really? An imaginary comic book hero has risen to the level of our traditions? Like Christmas and Thanksgiving and the Tooth Fairy? Apparently. But the whole point of this is that Brian Michael Bendis responded as follows. Quote, we pissed off Glenn Beck, and that was amazing. I don't think Glenn Beck is an idiot because he's a conservative. I literally think he's just an idiot. Regardless of his belief system, he's just a lunatic. So that was hilarious. I told my wife that she doesn't have to get me anything for my birthday because nothing will make me happier than this made me. Why, by God, that almost sounds like a little bit of channeling of the Franklin Delano Roosevelt in 1934 saying, I welcome their hatred. Sometimes it's okay to tell idiots that they're idiots. Brian Michael Bendis found that place, telling Glenn Beck that he's an idiot. I mean, how else do you respond to something like this?
Anybody notice the new Spider-Man? You see him on the front page of the Blaze. The new Spider-Man is really quite great. He looks just like President Obama. It's fantastic. Look, I don't care that Spider-Man that they killed. Now, this is not the mainstream Spider-Man. This is, I guess, there's two Spider-Man. How's that happen, Stu? Do you know?
Not a comic book geek, so no, I do not.
Okay. Peter Parker lives on, I guess, in another edition of Spider-Man. This edition of Spider-Man, they killed Peter Parker off. People went nuts, and they were like, what are you doing? And they said, no, Spider-Man will be back. And another kid has been bitten by a spider, I guess. And this one is half Hispanic and half black. Do I care if he's half Hispanic, all Hispanic? No. Half black, half... I don't care. I really don't care.
Except
half
that he
gay,
does.
All gay. I don't really care. I don't care. I don't care. It's a stupid comic book. However, what I do care about is the fact that I think a lot of this stuff is being done intentionally. What was it that Mrs. Obama said before the campaign? Because it's strange how so much of this seems to all be happening. Where she is, where she pointed out that we need to change the...
And Barack knows that we are going to have to make sacrifices.
Yeah.
We're going to have to change our conversation.
Yeah.
We're going to have to change our
tradition.
Our history. We're going to have to move into a different place.
Gosh, that seems to fit, doesn't
it? Yeah, it does. It does. And I know this is just one stupid example of it, but really? We now have a half-black, half-Hispanic gay Spider-Man? Okay. Now let's move on to the next one.
Thanks, Media Matters. God knows I love them. Because, you know, having a comic book that looks a little bit like America, you know, we just can't have that. It'd be wrong. And sometimes, instead of spending 30 minutes opining about this on a radio show, maybe the only way you respond to it is the way that I shared with you. You know what? The guy's an idiot. He's just a lunatic. Just an idiot. He is, given that this is Monday the 22nd day of August, he's a moron! Just a moron. Kudos, by the way, to California Democratic Representative Maxine Waters. She appears to have also gotten the same memo. She was talking to some constituents recently. She was touring with the Congressional Black Caucus when constituents began to talk about their frustration with President Obama. And, well, his predilection for surrendering to mean right-wingers. And Maxine Waters, whom I respect, didn't take just a heck of a lot of issue with that, but kept her powder dry, as it were. And I think rightly so. For the people who are injecting the single greatest amount of poison into our political process, namely, and to wit, the teabaggers. I'm hoping here that, yes.
Unemployment, the faltering economy, and the discord in Congress gave voters plenty to vent about at the Kitchen Table Summit today in Inglewood. Congresswoman Maxine Waters and other lawmakers were on hand to listen, and Eyewitness News reporter Leanne Suter is live in Inglewood, where more than 1,000 people showed up to have their say. Leanne?
John and Giovanna, it was standing room only here at Inglewood High today as residents made their voices heard, expressing their concerns to three local congressional leaders.
I'm asking the script be flipped and asking what the country can do for me and the people in this room and this nation.
Anger and frustration filled the Inglewood High Gymnasium during a meeting with California Congress members Maxine Waters, Laura Richardson, and Karen Bass.
I'm working hard, payday to paycheck like most people in here. Thank God I'm healthy because a medical illness would bankrupt me. I'd lose everything.
More than 1,000 people turned out to talk with their leaders in Washington and to demand their help. Top on their list?
Jobs. We have no jobs. And I just want to make it clear to America that there are African-American people want to work.
The jobless rate for African-Americans is almost 16%. Officials say in some communities like Inglewood, it's closer to 35%.
3 years ago, I worked as an architect, making $100,000 a year, driving a Porsche 911 Carrera, and had a house. and now I have none of that. All I have with me today is my knapsack as my home.
From unemployment to cuts in education to the discord in Congress, the concern is growing. Maxine Waters has called on the president to step up to the plate and today told voters she's ready to fight, especially those now controlling the House.
I'm not afraid of anybody. This is a tough game. You can't be intimidated. You can't be frightened. As far as I'm concerned, the Tea Party can go straight to hell.
Testify.
And certainly the crowd liked that. Now, to do their part to help Southern California, the congressional trio announced a massive...
Yada, 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 yada. Sometimes you have to just talk that way. And it's okay. Sometimes... God, how long have we been waiting for someone to tell the teabaggers to go to hell? Perhaps if there was a little more Harry Truman and a little less Ronald Reagan in President Not Sure, we could have taken care of that a long time ago. Sometimes you just have to tell the freaks that we're... Well, I'm channeling our dear friend and editorialist Reverbo on this one. Sometimes you just have to tell the freaks that we've idled the bus long enough and we're going to close the doors and we're going to leave without them. What else do you do? And it goes on and on and on. No, we really have us some morons. We've got, in fact, a poster child now. You remember all those Sally Struthers ads? We have a poster child for morons. The dateline on the story that Matt Osborne sent to me, the dateline on the story from Stars and Stripes is Kaiserslautern, Deutschland, otherwise known to us as Germany. And it's a story about an Air Force staff sergeant who has been discharged from the Air Force. The Air Force will not say, as a result of privacy laws, why this staff sergeant has been discharged. The spokesman won't say if the discharge was honorable. But what we do know for a fact is that an Air Force staff sergeant, and remember, please, that of all the armed forces in the United States serving under the colors, the Air Force, as documented by our friend Mikey Weinstein at the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, the Air Force has been more corrupted, more proselytized by the right-wing religion industry than all the others combined, and they too have their problems. But the Air Force is absolutely toxic with right-wing religion industry influence. From the highest levels of the General Staff Command all the way through the United States Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs, Colorado, down to the least ranking enlisted man, person. And so it comes as no surprise that this staff sergeant writes saying, I'm on short time to discuss much other than to say that the Lord has allowed me to remain with my family, and we are leaving Germany, and I am receiving an honorable discharge. Now, what is it that this staff sergeant has been saying of late? Well, he has a Twitter account, among other things. About a month ago, he wrote, I just want to turn in my ID card and call the president an outlaw who should be arrested for lying about his birth document. He also took on Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I'm leaving military over gay issue. My medical board to leave the military says I can't adapt and adjust.
They don't want to serve with no homos.
This clown has been in the United States Air Force since 2002. He was an ophthalmology technician with the 86th Airlift Wing. And like I said, we have us a poster child. This jackass has been posting all over creation in an absolute flurry of late. Posting, among other places, or claiming an email claiming to be him, at birtherreport.com. That's right. He's a birther. The Air Force stating, however, we can confirm that he is not being discharged because of his recent public comments that have appeared on various websites. He's just being discharged. And he's our poster child. For our staff sergeant in question is none other. Oh, sit down. Those of you who have ever for a moment doubted that the living God is a God of irony, fall on your names, fall on your knees and repent any time now. The Air Force has discharged a birther and a homophobe by the name of Staff Sergeant Darren Moran. And now you know the rest of the story. I mean, there's a picture here and everything. And his little blue suit with his little shirt and his little blue tie and his little decorations and stuff. Yes, we have a Moran poster child. Staff Sergeant Darren Moran. Apparently formerly of the United States Air Force.
That Obama, he's falsified his birth documents. That's what he's done. He's falsified.
Yeah, sleep tight. Well, I don't know. Sleep a little better tonight, America. There's one less moron in the Air Force. Literally. But where one is removed, more take their place. Yes, Lord, yes. I'm thinking, among other things, of... let's just pick one. Yeah, how about David in South Carolina. It's your state's turn. How about we go to South Carolina? How about we talk for a minute about Sherry Lanford Smith? Sherry Lanford Smith is the chairwoman of the Sumter Tea Party in South Carolina. And she's a real laugh riot. You know, sometimes you really do. You have to look at these people, and all you can do is say, you know what, you're an idiot. Here's another. Sherry Lanford Smith. Oh, you're going to love this. Sherry Lanford Smith has noted the chairwoman of the Sumter Tea Party loves to post a good joke here and there. Now, I love a good joke as much as the next one. I mean, I love that particular joke where the newlywed teabagging couple are on their honeymoon and they can't quite figure out how things are supposed to work. And eventually she says, honey, take that thing you play with and put it where I pee. And so the teabag and newlywed husband gets up and goes and gets his bowling ball and throws it in the sink. Yeah, okay, but just do it. That was not meant to be funny. So this is a retread of an old joke. Because teabaggers aren't creative enough, and Republicans and right-wingers are not creative enough to come up with their own. She posted on her Facebook profile last Thursday. Obama looked at Michelle, chuckled, and said, "You know, I could throw a $1,000 bill out of the window right now and make somebody very happy." Michelle shrugged her shoulders and replied, "I could throw $100 bills out of the window and make 10 people very happy." Here in their exchange, the pilot of the plane said to his co-pilot, "Such big shots back there. I could throw both of them out of the window and make 256 million people very happy." If you're one of the 256 million people, pass it on. Now, Sherry Lanford Smith defended her dissemination of this real knee slapper by saying, "It's just a joke. I had no idea it would be an issue." And it wouldn't have been had a press outfit called the Sumter Item taken a screenshot of the post and then asked questions of Ms. Smith, who promptly disappeared it. But not before the screenshot was taken. Like I said, sometimes you just look at them and you say, they're idiots. Mainly, you know, because they are. Morons. Morons everywhere. And you, of course, are welcome to kick in with your own nominees for this Moran Monday. God, it's good to be back behind the microphone. These trips are necessary. But it takes me away from some of my mental health grounding that I get from you guys. So you may very well have nominees of your own this evening, and you're welcome to bring them to the table. You know the number, right? 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4. Head on, H-E-A-D-O-N. On your nickel, if you want to not cost us the money of the toll-free number, 304-658-3333. It all rings in the same place. Everybody goes into the same queue. There's no preference one way or the other. I have no way of telling. Hell, I don't even know who's on the phone. It's not like this is a multi-person operation with an engineer and a screener and a research assistant and somebody down there that polishing my toenails while that. No. Just little old me. So you ring in, I press the button, and you go on hold, and then we see who's where. Ron and Raleigh writing in, based on the audio of the Inglewood, California citizens meeting at which Representative Maxine Waters was present. Ron says, to give some perspective, the black architect is a very rare, very, very rare commodity. All minorities compose 2% of all licensed architects. So you can imagine the percentage of black architects within that number. This young man put in 6 years undergrad work plus 4 years of internship. Then he had to take a 3-day, 12-hour-a-day test. Imagine his student loan burden. He will never reattain his former level of income. Maybe he should get some retraining. We live in an America in which a significant percentage, idiots, are not interested in empowering people, especially people of color, to be that architect. That guy is, in a word, screwed. And I'll be honest, you know, I'm not the shell answer man. I don't know what it takes to get us back to a country that isn't screwed and is interested in making making a better America. Because you know what? More tax cuts aren't going to do it. But remember, the poor don't pay taxes. I mentioned before that Margie is pretty sick with a rotten gallbladder. While we were out doing stuff, Agnes and I, to work on making the gas tank not leak and getting that up and running, she said, while you're out, bring me one of those peach teas, please. And she's my baby. She may be 17, but she's still my baby. And so we did, and it was 99 cents. And here in West Virginia, we pay a 6 cents on the dollar tax on soda pop alone. Not just a straight-up sales tax, a soda pop tax. And if that had been straight-up juice, the tax would have been lower. But the poor don't pay any taxes, remember? Because, you know, the right wing says so. But then again, they are, what's the word we're looking at? Yes, idiots. They're idiots. I'm forever in that guy's debt. They're idiots. And I want to share a couple of emails with you before we go to the break. This one came in from our buddy Horst. Also, if you subscribe to his channel at YouTube, he is Horzac, H-O-R-Z-A-C. Horst asked me to convey this to you, and I will do so, because he says things that are, he says things and says them eloquently that I could not begin to touch. Horst had just sent in a contribution. And he said, I don't have a lot to spread around, but I'd like to post a contribution challenge whenever the next show occurs. That would be tonight. It always feels like a loss when there's no show for even one day, much less several in a row, but I'm beyond happy to have you out there on the front lines to represent the rest of us when an important opportunity arises. Unfortunately, I understand how this infects, how this affects the income stream from the supporting listeners. And it's already been a rough couple of months due to the very important work you've been doing to make sure that we in the Horn family have the opportunity to receive gratis the very finest historical education available. And then there was the thing with the transmission and the punctured gas tank. It's like the old Zappa song, the torture never stops. But hey, we dig in and bear it, and lately it seems like, if anything, the show has gotten even more fun than usual. Last Monday was an absolute hoot. And then Tuesday's show was just awesome all across the board. Anyhow, says Horst, the challenge. I don't have a lot of scratch to toss around, but I'll match up to $50 for today's show, or tomorrow's. Time zones confuse me to no end. I'd like to mention an interesting little factoid for the listeners out there. Next time you hear of someone working long hours in an Asian factory for low wages, you can say you know one. And I'm not even from here. On average, I was making about $2 an hour, but lately I've been having to put more time in, so it's gone down somewhat. So the challenge essentially represents 25 to 30 hours of labor for me, or roughly 3 days. I'm not saying this to be a jerk or a martyr or some other sort of freak. I know that times have never been harder for anyone in the non-millionaire class, which is probably all of us. And my wonderful wife works too, so it's not like we can't pay the mortgage or put food on each other every month. I simply hope that everyone might ponder for a moment just how much a $5 or $10 contribution represents in their overall monthly financial outlook. And balance that against how much sanity, humanity, and sheer enjoyment you derive from this show and this wonderful cast of supporting listeners, I know what it's worth to me. Your pal, Horst. So there it is. Horst standing good for $50, matching $50 that might come in this evening, so that your 50 becomes 100. I don't get a whole lot of stories like Horst's, but I am grateful when I do. Not because I've got some sort of monumental ego going, yeah, tell me again how great I am, because I'm not. Jesus, I can't even fix a hole in a gas tank without help from you guys. You know, Bob, you need a sheet metal screw, some of that plastic weld goop stuff, and maybe a rubber gasket. And you know what? I ain't MacGyver. I'm down there under that thing today going, nope, that screw doesn't fit. That one's too little. That one's too big. And that one is... It with the screw just right. Oh, boy! Meanwhile, MacGyver-esque, though, feeling like that little screw is like, you know, Jesus, do I clip the green wire, the blue wire, the yellow wire, or the one with the purple and pink stripes, and there's the spotted one, and it all blows up. I have such an appreciation for all that you guys do. None of this would be taking place without you. And rather than hosting a conversation radio program every night about the only thing I would say for 8 hours a day would be either three or four words, depending on how you count hyphenations. Welcome to Walmart! That's the truth. So thank you to Horst for his challenge. And there is another challenge. And I'm going to share that one with you too. John, who addresses me as Mr. Kincaid, that has got to stop. Bob will do fine. John is fed up with PayPal. Nor can I much blame him. I hate him, too. But it's just until something better comes along, it's what there is. For an online service. John writes in and says, next broadcast, please announce yet another challenge to the Horn audience. I will match all actual, as in not pledged, but actually received contributions to the show, made via snail mail only. I will never again use nor sanction the use of the detested PayPal parasitic financial services middle person that it is, up to a limit of $100. Hope this works, and if it does, that it helps. Please email me to confirm that this has happened sometime during August, and I will send another check to fulfill my match. John says, maybe not family, but most assuredly a soul member of the Horn community. No, John. No, you're family. We're all family. The things that happen here can't happen and don't happen anywhere else. I would rather have the reality that transpires in a couple of hours on this program than all the policymakers in this country rolled together for a massive mega broadcast, all the experts, all the senators and representatives and exalted noble knowers. No. Because American reality is not politicians. American reality is not experts unless we consider that you yourselves are the experts. Mainly because you are. And these conversations can't take place without your help. And yeah, things fell off a little bit in my absence. They always do. I mean, it's just how things work. A big thank you going out to Horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner, who I haven't heard from Rick in a while. But in my absence, I did. And he helped out, and what a help it was. Thank you to all of you who did those empty, absent days. I try to write thank yous for everyone that comes in. If I miss one, I apologize. And it's no harm to let me know. So there stands the challenges. I'm proud to announce that Horst's challenge has been met. The next one is for those of you who don't like to use PayPal, and that comes from John. He will match up to $100. If you want to send me an email saying, you know, I've sent it along or I'm sending it along, Boss Man Wayne, who got through his surgery very nicely, thank you very much, and thank you for your kind thoughts, will tell me when those roll in, especially if you put in a note saying, matching John's challenge. Okay? Thank you all very much for how you make this work. So we'll take a little break and come back to your phone calls. Light them up. Well, most of them are lit up, if there's still phone the people on there. There's two lines that are I know to be open, so thank you. And fill them up, and we will make this Moran Monday one filled with your conversation. You are listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You are listening to The Horn. Conversation radio, like none other. We'll be back. This is for you, Sherry Lawton Smith. This is for you, Michelle Bachman.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Total Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Total Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, it's stuff for my dog.
Holy crap! There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Total Genius. We got your soap right here.
And don't worry about that body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Nine and a half minutes past the hour, and I wanted to share one more email with you before we go to the phones, which I'm going to do right after that. Got an email in from our buddy Tosh, and it was occasioned by, I guess, some remarks that I made last week about the fact that my parents refused. And see, I talk about them as my parents, you know. They're still my parents, and I'm still their kid. I guess we always are, aren't we? Being Depression era, the children of the Depression refused to trade up or take on more debt and move out of their neighborhood just because, you know, some folks of different skin tone had moved in. Yeah, we recognize it as white flight. And Tosh wrote in, and he said, "This is truly odd. My parents also fought against leaving the neighborhood where I was born as long as possible. They were forced to move when the flight of our white neighbors caused the owner of our block of row houses to default, and then they were compelled to move. My dad was the ultimate tech nerd in a day when such were few and far between. He earned a master's in abstract math." Oh, Jesus, that's like when I was reading the Forrest Gump, and Forrest took that class in advanced light. You know, he couldn't pass English, but advanced light, he had that. Abstract math, I can only imagine. And I was not, Tosh, I was not comparing your dad and Forrest Gump, just abstract math. Jesus, one and one and two is abstract math to me. But then again, you know, I'm an old English major. He earned a master's degree in abstract math, but as a TA at Case Western Reserve in Cleveland, he made friends with the black bodyguard of a local black mobster. He said that it wasn't uncommon for him to be the only white face in places he went. This would have been in the 1945 to 49 time frame before my parents were married. My mom and he were both from places where even today there are not a lot of black folks, Vermont and Montana. Note the common thread. But neither had a lick of bias. She spent her days involved in Reverend Ralph Abernathy's Poor People's March at encampment, but wasn't allowed to stay overnight at the encampment because it was too dangerous. Not because of the folks who were camping, I might add, but because of the people who were prone to attack the campers. I mean, I was confronted with that when I saw this four-page spread of commie red-baiting smears that were perpetrated against the Highlander Center when I was looking at that stuff last week down in Tennessee. It was a reminder that although we like to say that journalism in America has gone to hell, it's been there for a while. There was never a golden age when journalism was done purely and honestly and earnestly. There have always been nasty people willing to make money by advancing the causes of bigots and racists and freaks. And they were prone to attack things like a Poor People's March. They were prone, you know the stories. They attacked the Highlander Center. And certainly it is no comparison between the two. But I got to tell you, when we got the hole plugged in the gas tank and poured in a 5-gallon can of gas to see, you know, well, 1 gallon at first, just to see if it would not leak. So far it's holding. Great advice. Thank you, guys. Everybody. I got to tell you, when I went and put the key in the ignition to give it a turn, I made sure Ferg was on the other side of the building, on the other side of the house, on the other side of the yard. It makes you a little nervous. I'm just saying. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Hey, listen, so I was just wondering if you heard about the extra pressure that the Obama administration is putting on this Snyderman. He's the Attorney General of New York. He is fighting against this settlement with the banks over the robo signing and all the sort of effed up shit they did with the foreclosures, right?
Yeah.
At the moment, there's like a 50-day agreement. They're trying to get all the attorney generals to sign off on this, which means that Bank of America would be paying, like, you know, pennies on a dollar, like coming up with a $20 billion payment. And then all the cases that may be pending would have to go away. So the attorney general in New York is like, oh, well, hell, shit, we got a problem here.
Wait, stop. No, what? They just disappear?
Well, yeah, this is part of the agreement. And it's just like a lot of, you know, he's not the only one. There's a one in Delaware who happens to be Joe Biden's son. Oopsie. He is also sort of not interested in closing the door on this with this settlement. The banks, they want it done because, hey, they want to be able to continue fucking people over who happen to own a home in this godforsaken country. At any rate, the Obama administration is putting pressure on this man in New York to toe the line. Who are they looking out for again? The head of the HUD, HUD, actually said, Wall Street is our Main Street. That is a quote. It's like, damn, these people are fucking...
I saw that one comparison that Wall Street is Main Street and just sort of bounced my head off the microphone.
Yeah, listen, I mean, so anyway, this guy is still holding out, and to be honest, it's amazing. I have a phone number of his office if people want to give him a attaboy.
Yeah.
It's 800-771-7755. That's the 1-800 number, which, you know, I'll just leave as a 212 number, but who cares? Anyway, it's his, you know, it's just an office for Eric Snyderman. He's the AG for New York. Anyway, you know, because the pressure is on him to fold. And if he folds...
Well, I mean, he's in horse's head in the bed territory, isn't he?
Well, yeah, and if Biden, you know, I guess his father could get up his ass. I mean, there's only a couple other ones. The one in Nevada is kind of sort of holding out, and I forget the other places. There's about five of them who aren't, like, rolling. And apparently the pressure is on. But people need to understand that this is a threat to 100 years of proper law. Basically, if this deal goes through, they're basically
it's more than 100 years of property law, isn't it? I mean, as I understand property law, the concept of title is a rather ancient one.
Yeah, well, I mean, I say 100 years because I'm just thinking of whatever, you know, modern alignments they've done with it. You know what I mean? So, but you can go back centuries, I guess. But basically, it will allow the banks to say it was okay to foreclose on people without the proper paper. And it's just, you know, this is really, it's a huge threat to one of the basic, you know, underlying premise of this country. Now, you know, I don't always agree with the sort of sanctity of private property, but for the sake of argument, let's say that we do. Okay, so now the Obama administration is going to saddle up with these horrible banks. I mean, it's an outrage, and people really should be, you know, should make themselves aware of what's going on. I mean, it's a really boring, eyes glaze over type of subject, but it ain't funny, and I don't know what's going on in the White House. I mean, are they so venal and the need to get reelected? I guess that's it. I really don't know, but, you know, I'm kind of, you know, this is not a good thing, and the banks are pressuring, because I don't know if you know this, but Bank of America has lost like 86% of their value on the equity market, the stock exchange, since 2006. So they're going to
get it back out of somebody's hide, right?
Well, they're essentially insolvent. So we're talking about one of the too big to fail banks. Bank of America is in real trouble. And they're really pushing.
And also in line there, Sandra, isn't AIG sort of in the background trying to get their VIG?
Well, it's just, yeah. I mean, the thing, I mean, this is basically, okay, when we had the 2008 crash, you know, the financial hell, you know, we're looking at another bank crisis, Bob. I mean, I can't even believe I'm saying this. But if you look at Europe, you know, that's a basket case over there, and I don't know if people realize it, but Europe is the largest trading bloc. It is in the world. It's huge, okay, with the number of people and whatever. And it's in serious trouble. I don't know what they're going to do from Jackson Hole. You know, they have that meeting going on right now.
Oh, yeah, I never feel very good when, no.
Well, they're going to have to make some announcement. You know, people are thinking it's going to be some sort of QE3, but a lot of people are suggesting they're going to do some secret sterilization where they, you know, will introduce more money, dollars to the different banks in Europe. I mean, it ain't very nice what's going on, but to see where the Obama administration has aligned itself yet again is totally disgusting. And I know that it's all debatable about who you're going to vote for in 2012, but, you know, a part of me is thinking that, damn, you know, if liberals are upset now, how are they going to feel when he has nothing to answer for?
Well, did
I'm
you?
Sorry.
Well, no kidding.
It may not go the way you want it to go.
No, really. I mean,
When he gets reelected, I mean, are you sure? That's going to be what you want to see, because to me, it looks like he'll be free to do whatever the hell he wants, and I'm not too sure I want to know what Mr. Obama really wants to do.
Well, did you happen to see that clip where David Axelrod completely dodged a question from Michael Moore?
Oh, what was the question?
It was up over at Crooks and Liars, and I spent a little time with it earlier today. He showed up... Axelrod did on one of the ABC News programs, and he was being questioned by Jake Tapper, and Tapper asks him the following question: He says, he announces that Michael Moore sent it in. And he says, are you aware of how profoundly disappointed so many of the president's supporters are? Do you realize that each time the president moves to the right, he picks up no votes and loses many? Or do you cynically believe that because these people have nowhere else to go, they'll end up voting for Obama? Now, that's four lines of print on my computer monitor, all right?
But Jay Tapper actually asked somebody that?
Yeah, asked David Axelrod that on behalf of Michael Moore, I guess because it makes good controversy.
Shut the hell up. Well, what was the answer?
Axelrod's response is three paragraphs. Well, first of all, no one is cynically moving one way or the other. The president is not moving left or right. He's interested in moving the country forward.
Right, that's a good one. Are you, where's my bag so I can throw up right quick?
Right, I know. And it,
moving forward? Oh, no, I thought you didn't want
Yeah, I guess that's more, Sandra, of that moving forward and not looking, you know, we got to look, can't look back, you know.
Which is another term on our list, the list that keeps growing anyway, yeah.
And it goes on and on. All of these things are part and parcel of a strategy that is completely opposed by the other side, who want to go back to the same trickle-down deregulation. You know, the same mantra we heard in the last decade that led up to this problem we're hearing again. I think that this is such a profound choice that the president's supporters and independent voters and people across this country will rally, because the future will be determined by this debate and the path we take. You know, and I get frustrated from time to time, Sandra, with this argument about the false dichotomy between left and right, but sometimes it's so in your daggum face that you can't help but notice the false dichotomy between left and right. I mean, do you understand what I'm saying? And I don't mean that in a demeaning way. There really is a false dichotomy, because as long as, I saw that Ted Rall cartoon.
Yeah.
Where Obama is in the little Jedi robe, and he's sitting across from Darth Vader, and he says, "Well, okay, I'll let you blow up the universe, but don't blame me if your poll numbers go down. And by the way, I won't use my Jedi powers because that would be cheating."
Well, that guy wants to have armed revolution, so.
Well, yeah, I think Ted does, but.
Well, no, I'm not. I'm just saying, you know, there's a lot of frustrated people. And the thing is, though, you know, the Bill McKibben, that whole thing is well interesting, and I'm anxious to see how it plays out. But I'm not holding my breath. I'm like, you got to depend on that fool. Apparently Obama can stop it just by not signing off on it. But he has to do an action, though, right?
Right. And McKibben has, I mean, this is a fascinating story, and I'm glad you brought it up, Sandra, because it deserves some time. Bill McKibben spent 48 hours in jail.
Yeah.
Now, this was supposed to be catch and release, you know, just kind of like, and it's no fun, even. We call it catch and release. It's no fun. Ask Malloy.
Yeah, no,
he went through a ton of BS, you know, getting through that process last fall.
No, but they decided to do a two-day jobby on this one, right?
Well, they hung 2 days on Bill McKibben and several other people to try to dissuade other people from continuing to get arrested, because the plan is to continue the arrests every day until it is absolutely impossible for the for-profit media to any longer ignore it. And, for that matter, the Obama administration.
Well, wait, they actually thought that would stop that McKibben? Wow, these people are bubbled out. I don't really, and I think there's a lot of people who are more than happy to try this one on. I'm really anxious to see this one, because
150 people got arrested today.
Yeah, but also keep in mind that the only group that's managed to have any success with this horrible administration are the gays. And what do the gays do? Them people pushed back nonstop, locked
right.
themselves up, chained themselves, heckled Bush, oh my God, slip up, heckled Obama nonstop all day, every day. And what did they get? They actually got something. So don't tell me that this agitation won't work on Obama. He don't want to see this.
And these guys aren't going away. I think the administration and so forth really don't want to see this. Because it is a problem for them, Sandra, because when you go do one of these things in D.C., the cops will be very businesslike with you. I mean, I've seen it happen. Mm-hmm. And they come up to the leaders and they say, okay, so you want to get arrested? Yeah, we're going to get arrested.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, well, how many people are you going to have get arrested? And you say, 50. And they go, we'd like it better if it was 25. Well, you know, I don't have any control over that. But once, and then they bring in the natural gas powered green prison buses. Not kidding. That are, you know, rolling processing prison stations. Those who were there this past spring saw Malloy get arrested, and that's saw him waving from the bus. And if you press them beyond what they want, then they get ugly, and you start getting these 48-hour things, and they start coming up with other charges.
Okay, so they got ugly from this jump on this then, huh?
Yeah, because once it went from day one to day two to day three, and that's what's important about this tar sands protest, Sandra, is that it has a day two and a day three and a day four and a day five.
Well, no, everyone's been, you know, everyone's sort of forgotten, but, you know, until Tahrir Square. Now, that shit is inspiring everybody. Don't say it ain't, because it is. You know, people saw that if you stay put, well, shit happens. Well, that's the same thing in this country. So I am watching this thing, and I'm watching what is going to come out of it. I mean, I'm sure Obama is being pressed beyond belief by the oil companies.
Oh, I'm sure they're on it. They're on him like a duck on a June bug.
Yeah. So I mean, you know. But the thing is, I think regardless of the outcome of this, you know, we may need to just see more of this for every issue. I think this is what's going to have to happen now because we are so outpowered now.
And this tar sands thing really, really is important because, you know, this is a pipeline that's going to come down into America from Canada, and it's going to feed American oil lust, and it's going to poison, it's going to kill people.
No, but keep in mind that the oil that's being refined will go on the global market. I can't stress that. You know, don't sit around thinking, oh, shit, it's going to take care of our domestic issues. No. That shit will be refined and sold on the open market. That's the thing. So, you know, we're using destroying our whole world so these people can get more profit. It's incredible. It's just so blatant. And 1,700 miles of pipe through valuable, priceless farmland? Are you kidding me?
Well, and you know, what, national forest as well?
And not only that, but they have, like, they had the nerve to present when they were planning this shit, and they said, oh, we anticipate, you know, 11 spills. More like 91 spills. You see what I'm saying? I mean, they're lying. They're lying. And the shit that they're trying to send through is like mud. So it's not even going to flow right without the whole pipe being heated. I'm just hearing this shit and thinking, this ain't going to work.
I mean, it's a laundry list. When they talk about, it's a laundry list of crap that can go disastrously wrong.
Yeah.
And it's not, and there's enough different crap involved with this pipeline that if one thing goes wrong, it's going to be bad enough.
No,
but if A, B, C, and D go wrong?
Yeah, and I'm stuck on the, wait a minute, this shit has to be heated? You see what I'm saying? It's like, how much energy are you using to get energy? That's the thing. No one ever seems to touch that. It's like, hello, how much energy does it take to create a barrel of oil from this tar sands shit? Have you seen the process? Oh, my God.
Yeah, well, and that's why I feel a certain affinity with these folks is because, you know, we watched the vicious advocacy for coal to liquids here in Appalachia, you know, where it takes 4 gallons of fresh water that can never be fresh again to make 1 gallon of liquid coal jet fuel.
Right. Right, no, I mean, this tar stuff is, like, disgusting, and the thing that kills me most is the money shot is that if they burn all this shit, game over. You know what I mean? Once again, I'm thinking about my little nieces and your young ones, too. Hello.
Yeah, and I mean, if you've got a conscience, Sandra, how can you not? How do you not look up and go, what are we handing you?
Yeah, no, it's too much. And so, I don't know. I just am trying to keep my good thoughts about this action because it really is, so it's supposed to go on for 2 weeks. Was that the set plan?
Yeah.
Wow.
And there's a chance, like I said, there's a chance that I'm going to be up there for some of this.
Well, the thing
I want to be because, among other things, I want, as somebody who works here in Appalachia with resource rape, I want to put my hand out to these people, and I want to link arms, both figuratively and literally, and start creating the awareness that this is all one thing. It's not that's about oil, and this is about coal, and Marcellus is about gas. It's all about the right of humans to continue being humans who live on the planet.
No, and it's just kind of like, you know, all this is coming in the face of the sort of blatant destruction of this infinite growth economic model that's falling apart in front of our eyes. You know what I mean? It's like, what are you doing? This model is unsustainable from the financial markets to the economy. And it's just sort of, you know, we're going to be destroyed with these motherfuckers trying to keep this shit going. This is the thing that's killing me. It's like, what is going on? I also heard that there's another slick in the Gulf around where that spill was. Have you heard about this?
I've been badly out of the loop, no. Yeah. Oh, God.
Well, I haven't really...
So is something is the top shot or the money shot or
something is happening? Yeah, and BP is already trying to say, oh, they don't have nothing to do with it. But I don't know what the latest.
Of course they are.
And the only other thing I wanted to mention is, you know, where is? I mean, I know I yell a lot, so I need to shut up. But where's my girl Susan Rice? That bitch should be on TV yelling to the top of her lungs right by now. And let's be scared, people.
You mean all about how they done whipped Gaddafi?
Syria could be next because if you know, waiting on spin this, if their little intervention from the air. So I think Assad, he might want to calm the fuck down. Okay?
Yeah, and you know that he's thinking about it because he put out press releases saying, ah, the opinion of the Europeans and the United States is meaningless.
Yeah, well, he needs meaningless my ass.
That's Arabic for... I've got wheelbarrows going 24/7 nonstop out to the Learjet carrying out the money.
And then another question is how much gold is the Syrian central bank buying today? Listen, I don't mean to make jokes of it. I have to say I was quite shocked. I was watching Al Jazeera, of course, like anyone with any sense would, and the shots were pretty amazing. What was coming out of Tripoli, and you know, it's when they arrest the greedy family members who are enriching themselves. What can you say, Bob? You got to be like, oh my God, too bad for you. But what's next for Libya, though? Because their infrastructure, mercifully, is intact. So we don't have the Iraq thing. But what we do have is no viable institutions. So I'm not too sure what's coming. And I am kind of concerned, you know. I don't know what's supposed to happen now in Libya for those people. And, you know, I'm a bit fearful of it.
I don't either. And
it's not like Egypt. Egypt is completely different. People need to know that Egypt had they have really strong institutions. Even if they are backed by the military, they still exist, which is why Israel is bending over backwards trying to apologize for killing some of them peeps.
Yeah, so, whoops.
Because Egypt ain't messing around, and Israel knows that. I thought that was very interesting that the country that won't apologize for shit was coming out saying, oh, we so sorry.
Yeah, we screwed up a little bit on that one.
Yeah, that was interesting. But anyway, back to Libya. I just wonder what's next, though. You know what I mean?
Well, I think what's next is sort of presaged in the words of, some godforsaken wingnut, Sandra, who said that now that we've beaten Libya... yay, we win. Libya needs to respond by giving us all its oil.
Oh, that would be Donald Trump.
That was Donald Trump, wasn't it?
Yes, that would be Donald Trump. I mean, it's just like, dude, sit down and shut the F up and go look at your trust fund and air money. Just please go away. Because that was like, damn. You know, I don't care about no Donald Trump, but I am interested to hear what Miss Rice has to say, because that's the power. I was looking at her leading one of those Security Council meetings. Damn. Scary.
And now that this meme has taken hold that the right wing will not give Obama credit for successfully conquering Libya, I wouldn't be surprised to see Miss Rice come out a little bit.
Well, no, the thing is, they're not going to... Listen, we've already supposedly forgotten that old Obama took out... Bin Laden. And if you're on the right side of politics, Obama's turning out to be a hella effective president, all right?
Yeah, that's the thing. You're right. You know, that one bears repeating, Sandra, because we sit here and we kind of carp and complain a lot, you know, because we're a bunch of kumbaya playing tambourine shaking liberals.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah, but, you know, yeah.
But if, no.
I'm a realist, though, at the end of the day on some things.
So. There's a lot of things for you to like Obama about if you're into bombing foreign countries and ramping up the military-industrial complex. And
preserving the status quo.
Yeah.
That's what he does.
And you know what? I got to take just a second and run a question by you, if I may, please. I caught this little sound bite from John Huntsman over the weekend. The one,
homeboy.
The one where he stuck it in Rick Perry,
awesome.
Gave it several good hard twists, and then snapped off the blade.
The science one?
Yeah. And I don't know if that was pre-secession Texas or post-secession Texas.
Do you have the quote? Because it was great.
It was beautiful. And I do have it somewhere here, but it'll take some looking. But no, this whole thing got me thinking. I've been known to do that, you know, Sandra. And apparently it worked what Huntsman did because. You know, we were talking just last week about Rick Perry's crazy-ass 9-month-old book, The Fed Up.
Oh, God.
The one where he called the Civil War a matter of federal intervention.
Oh, and Social Security is all like a Ponzi scheme. It's unconstitutional. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he's already running away from the book now.
I bet he's sprinting, that fool.
And I think it has something to do with John Huntsman. And the question I'm asking it, now let's remember, John Huntsman worked for
exactly
Barack Obama,
and he was an ambassador to
China.
Okay, you know they got to keep all that in mind.
It's just like watching Tetris in a beer joint. You know the blocks just keep falling into place, don't
right.
they?
No, stop that name, God damn it!
Yeah, now the stupid little song stuck in your head, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's hideous. That one, anyway. That's like. If you ever been on mushrooms doing that, too,
it's brutal.
Okay,
it's brutal.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to flash back. Oops. I don't mean to go back to those days, but yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Huntsman to Jake Tapper. I think there's a serious problem. The minute that the Republican Party becomes the party, the anti-science party, we have a huge problem. We lose a lot of people who would otherwise allow us to win the election. Carl Tapper, Bush political guru called Karl Rove called Perry's claim unpresidential. What do you think? Well, I don't know if that's pre-secession Texas or post-secession Texas.
Oh, two snaps for that fool! Listen, he don't have a prayer though, because we on a crazy train. That's unfortunate for us, because to me, we got Huntsman and we got Obama. I don't know the difference.
No, you don't, and you're not supposed to.
I don't know the difference.
I mean,
back to Truman.
No, just
what Truman said.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, and I don't, you know, I don't really know. I kind of think if they run the crazy train against Obama, he's going to win because we get back to his effectiveness.
Well, this is one of those moments where I'm willing to credit Barack Obama with some of that Jedi mind trick 11-dimensional chess. Now, I don't think he's playing any of that crap when he's surrendering to John Boehner.
Oh, no, I don't think there is no surrender involved. It's coordination.
Right, but when he's playing politics up here, that presidential politics and winning re-election and stuff, look, come on. Work with me. Is it that far? I mean, you know that he and Huntsman have spoken. They weren't just like staring daggers at each other across the room when he appointed him ambassador to China, right?
Well, exactly. No, shit, no.
And so, hey, John, Barry, how would you feel about running for president? Really, Barack? No, really, John. You know, there's a lot of crazy out there, John. You're not crazy, right? Oh, no, I'm not. I mean, it damn sure wouldn't be the first time that one party ran a ringer in the other's primary. That, well, God Almighty, the Wisconsin Republican Party did that in Erie, up in Wisconsin a couple of weeks ago. They ran mugwumps against Democratic candidates who were running against the recall candidates.
Right.
I mean, this is old politics, and I just kept looking at how much sense John Huntsman was making, going, man, he's a plant.
Well, no, but the thing is that it's, like I said, this sort of Libya, is another check mark, and I don't know. I don't really know.
Well, just look at the number potential of this. Let's say that John Huntsman can draw enough of the semi-sane old guard sorta kinda Eisenhower Republican vote away from Romney, but can't win in his own right. Well, that puts the crazy train into play. And you're right, if they run crazy train, there's not going to be a little greasy spot left of Rick Perry or Michelle Bachmann or any of the other loonies.
Well, no, even if unemployment goes to 11% and they run the crazy, I still think Obama, because I'll agree with the right wing when they say he got an advantage being black. Yeah, shit, you remember who the hell Obama is? It'll come into play for him.
And I know that.
When you look and see crazy on one side, especially if you say a crazy ticket like Rick and Michelle, can you imagine that crazy ticket?
Oh, or, well, remember, Godzilla from Wasilla is pulling up in her bus every now and then just to grab some attention. She wants to run for vice president some more.
Oh, God. Well, anyway, so the thing is, let's be honest. I have to say that I think, maybe I'm wrong, but I think Romney, that bitch is peaked, and he's out. He is not very appealing, that guy.
Oh,
what's wrong with him?
Well, no, it's like the Obama administration said in their plans to run against him. He's just weird.
No, he is very strange, and he's bulldozing $12 million homes so he can build a bigger one. It's like, dude, all that shit's not playing too great. You freak.
Yeah, that's not the move of a guy. I mean, this isn't cranky old John McCain talking about his, his three cabins.
Oh, my
God. That house is visible. That house is in La Jolla.
Right. Somebody should tell him, dude, you look like somebody who fires folks, and you have a strange religion. That equals not electable. Because the right-wing Christian Dominion people aren't going to vote for you, and I'm sure the hell ain't.
And see, so. I kind of know what's on the mind of these right-wing jackals, Sandra, because I see where they're trying to take the dialogue. I got a pitch this morning for me to interview a clown by the name of Joe Hicks.
Oh,
who, well, he, you know, he's got a pink shirt on and a striped tie, and I'm not sure, I don't know, black guy, white guy, not sure, shaven head, porn stash, round glasses, and he's out there to pitch the idea that continuing high levels of unemployment are threatening to destabilize Obama's more loyal base, African-American voters. You know what, I don't say never, but I don't think there's much of anything going to pull the base away from Obama.
Well, he can't have too many more of those black architects, though. That ain't good.
No,
that look is wow.
And I'm sure that he goes to bed at night lately, looking at Michelle and says, "I just wish Maxine Waters would go away."
Yeah, because that ain't a good. Now see, right there, that ain't a good look. I was like, "Damn, how many more of them overeducated Negroes you gonna bring out? Shit, it's not a good look." Anyway, I'm sorry.
Well, and there, I mean, even though Ron points out that they are that they are a statistically small number, like architects, they're enough to be painfully visible, and to be made something that Obama has to pay attention to.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean those sort of folks. Yeah, that's a problem for him. I mean, the unemployment thing is a huge problem for him. But if you juxtapose the crazy train, see, almost anything can happen. Because I think at the end of the day, most people going to get a gander at them, too. Yo, you know what? They're crazy. And as we see more of the Texas miracle slash nightmare, I think, you know, people don't want the U.S. to be all about $8 an hour jobs.
No, and let's remember one thing. You know, the teabaggers and so forth, and especially the religion industry, Sandra, are so proud of pointing out, you know, there's millions of us. Well, in terms...
this phone's going to die.
Oh, okay. No worries. All right. No worries.
Listen, have a good evening.
All right. See ya. Bye now.
Bye.
That unwore out Sandra's phone. But remember, as the right-wingers tell people how powerful they are, there are now in America a percentage of people who believe in no deity. 20% at least. And they are the voting equal to the people who thump Bibles but don't read them. That should be sobering. At least to them. But no, they're drunk on religion. They're not going to sober. Hey, welcome to the program.
I'm calling from Ukraine. This is McFoxy's. Your order is ready.
I will have some chicken McFoxy nuggets.
Oh, that was... For those people who haven't seen that Bourdain episode, that was the climax of the episode.
Oh, I'm in front of the tube like a little... because tonight's the trip across Iraq into Kurdistan.
Oh, that's going to be a good one. I'm going to have to sit down and watch that. But I did want to say something about the tar sands, and I think it's a good reference, is you should have the director who put together the aerial documentary Petropolis, Peter Mettler, on the program sometime in the near future.
Metler?
Yeah, I'll see if I can find a link to his email. I'm sure, I don't think his documentary got widespread distribution. Surprise! Surprise! An aerial documentary documenting the damage that the tar sand extractions has caused. Wow, what a surprise that Miramax or Sony didn't jump on board on that one.
Yeah, amazing, isn't it?
It's just, I mean, it really is, and then this goes to a larger issue: why the Last Mountain, why that wasn't promoted equally on the news. If this was, a documentary on the charter schools waiting for Superman, it would be on channel to channel. And yeah, this is what I keep telling progressives. I was like, is that you better be ready for pain, because pain, if you think pain is here yet, you haven't seen pain yet, ladies and gentlemen. You haven't seen pain yet, and it's coming to all of us. You know what it's like, Bob? It's like when you're in a dentist chair. The dentist is sitting there. He says, okay, we might have to use Novocaine. Just tell me if you hear if you feel some pressure, just let me know. But if you feel some pain, immediately stop me. That's where we're at, ladies and gentlemen.
Takes me to a movie reference. Do you remember the duel in Princess Bride?
Yes.
Ah, we're going to fight to the death? No. To the pain. Because, yes. You know, there's something awful about, okay, you're willing to, okay, if I hurt, I'm supposed to scream real quick?
Mm-hmm.
I don't even want to feel that. You know what I mean? Raise your hand. You know, by the time, you know, if it's me in the dentist chair, by the time we get to the part where I'm raising my hand, I'm raising my feet, and I'm flying out of the chair.
I was listening to what Richard Haass was saying on Fareed Zakaria about that the U.S. is in a pressure cooker. And when you have those people starting to make the sign and the symbol, like, get the helicopters ready, ladies and gentlemen, we're about to leave the island, so to speak. I mean, that's where we're at. That's where we're at. The pressure cooker. Nobody knows what's gonna. That's the thing about it. Nobody knows what's gonna happen. And I know we have a lot of people who continue to promote green energy and all of that. And that's great and all. But the reality is the U.S. isn't on the same page. We just got in Maine, we just got one of the big contracts for natural gas. So we're now in Back City.
Oh, great.
And when I say it's a big contract, like it's going to affect the major water lines. It's going to be near my town. No, the game is past rigged. That's the point. The game is past rigged. And anyone that is in a business to make serious profit and serious destruction, the true disaster capitalists on our environment, is going to do it.
But there are questions that present themselves, David, on this, because I've heard it over and over again. You know, in West Virginia, we have no legal infrastructure whatsoever for dealing with Marcellus drilling. And over the course of last week, I also heard that neither does Tennessee, and neither does Kentucky,
yeah.
And Pennsylvania, no, and New York had a moratorium, but it got lifted because the Republicans voted to allow gay folks to get married, and that was the payback.
Right.
And
well, you know,
the technology, okay, let me see if I can formulate this question. Just give me a second, David.
Okay.
The technology did not just come out of it wasn't like pulling a rabbit out of a hat, look what we can do.
Right.
It's been around for a while.
Right.
And it wasn't a secret. Mm-hmm. Why did none of these state governments take up the issue before it got to them and presented itself as a crisis? Well, I would submit to you, David, that the reason it didn't happen is because laws made in crisis situations are laws that are made poorly. And that you're constantly playing catch-up. Instead of establishing the rules for how the game is played, they start playing the game and you come in and try to impose rules on it. Well, it's not going to be nearly as successful. And that's because of the filthy money from the hydrocarbon industries in their various forms that flow like a nasty, filthy, toxic sewer straight into the halls of state power in places like Albany and Augusta and Harrisburg and Charleston and Frankfort and Nashville.
Mm. The advertising wall to wall on networks, I don't think I've ever seen it like one after the other on channel to channel to channel. And people need to pay attention to
natural
that.
Gas is good for you.
Right, right. I mean, everything. Just everything bad for you and toxic.
Oil from sand in Canada will create thousands of jobs and be great for America. Did you notice, if you notice the ads that they're running, I forget where I said, maybe MSNBC, maybe CNN, who knows, but they're no longer tar sands.
Mm.
We don't call them tar sands, just like the coal industry will not for the life of them call what they're doing here mountain bombing or mountaintop removal even.
Yeah, they refer to them as shale on 60 Minutes.
Shale, was that what it was? Shale sands. I can't remember the exact phrase, but all I was thinking was high fructose corn syrup popsicle ad.
Well, you know, you look at something like 60 Minutes, and this is why I keep telling people you really shouldn't pay attention to corporate news and corporate journalism, because we know what happened with 60 Minutes when they tried to take on Phillips Morris. And when I watched that segment on the tar sands, which I think was about 2 years ago, They didn't have any moment of, is this bad for the environment? They did none of that. None of that. They were just like, whoa, you can make $200,000 a year if you want to go down there and work with the tar sands? And they showed this guy where he was living. He lived in one of these like prefab houses. He said, yeah, it is a bit lonely, but I am making serious money and it's only for a short amount of time. And I just kept looking at that place and I was like, sweet Jesus. That is a huge hole. That's going to be a problem.
Yeah, and again, because there are really no rules.
Right.
There's going to be no remedy. And so, you know, government. This is, and let's reinforce, David, that
yeah.
This is a teabagger's wet dream. This is an anarcho-Randian's wet dream. I mean, they can't keep enough Kleenex coming into the Von Mises Institute in Auburn, Alabama. Because the idea of, I mean, this is the free market running absolutely wild. And the thing with this tar sands pipeline is that Barack Obama can stop it with the stroke of a pen.
Mm. And you look at it from a broad perspective, and it, the fact is that that so many business communities, and we shouldn't call them communities, we should call them business cabals, so many business cabals really do want to destroy neighborhoods because they look at that property and they're like, man, we got to get these people out of here. And that goes for all of these rural communities that aren't doing shit, even my town. My town is like virtually just a port city, a ghost town. I keep mentioning it. They said they made us the capital because they felt sorry for us. But there's some truth to it. There's truth to the fact that, and this is why I bring back to when people who are serious about green technology need to understand, as long as blood money exists, as long as the concept of blood money exists, and as long as there's something on the TV, you are always going to have to compete with that. You can never let your guard down, and it's never going to get better, because you're going to have more people, more population, more problems, and it's just going to go on and on and on. And that's why I say you have to get used to what you're living with now and continue to combat that, and hopefully you can hold on to that.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, I tweeted earlier that, you know, the state of West Virginia gave huge tax incentives to Cabela's, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they sell hunting clothes and stuff like that and boots and so forth. In fact, Cabela's has a reduced, if not entirely non-existent, tax burden in West Virginia because they've got some stuffed bears and some paint and some stuffed trout hanging on the wall, and they were given qualification for the tax purposes of being a museum. I'm not lying. A museum. And they're building another one now in Charleston, and I'm wondering if it's going to be a museum too, because it's got some poor dead bear in it. And yet at the same time, you know, we might like to have some green industry here. I was inspired because I remembered that down in the place where I grew up in Alabama, it sprang up out of the dirt there. Mm-hmm. And they do solar manufacturing, and they're expanding. And I saw one of their expanded facilities, and Jesus, it's a big building. Now, the state of West Virginia went out looking to court Cabela's to come and gave them huge tax breaks, but I have yet to read a story about the state of West Virginia offering tax breaks to anybody to come and make, oh, I don't know, wind turbines or wind turbine blades or wind turbine shafts or solar panels or anything in West Virginia. No tax breaks for them. Why? Because the coal industry is okay with Cabela's coming here, but the coal industry don't want no foxes in their hen house in terms of other industry that could challenge them.
That is the problem we face, and the other thing we face is the fact that we need some risky entrepreneurs and a lot of government assistance to step up. And a lot of people see, this is the thing, Bob. You can't inject people's dreams and hopes into someone saying this one's going to work, this one's going to work, this one's going to work. You're going to have a lot of entrepreneurs who are going to fail, and they have to know that front. They have to know that from the get go. You can't lead them on. And that's what I see that's happening now. You can't lead them on. You're going to have a lot of entrepreneurs that fail. That's how you build a country. That's the truth. A lot of people's misery, a lot of people's hopes and dreams and aspirations are going to be crushed because for a brighter future. It's that simple.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, where, I guess, you know, you could make the argument that part of what they're doing with this tar sands protest, yes, it's don't let the pipeline go through, but it's also representative of the fact that, you know, we don't need another damn pipeline. We need things that don't require pipelines. You know, the technological and the financial resources and person power that will go into creating that damn thing. How about we put the skull sweat into what Bobby Kennedy constantly refers to as grid 2.0? How about that? So that we can take the energy we produce in North Dakota and a corner of Nevada and power the whole damned country with it. Why don't we work on that?
There is no way of coming to this conclusion, but we are definitely going to have to ration energy in the future. I don't know if it's going to be the near future or anything like that. We are destined for rolling blackouts, people.
Well, if we continue on the current course, David, but that's the thing. If the scientists get down to business and we create Grid 2.0, again, in North Dakota alone, and you know, our pal Patty can testify to this, mm-hmm. she's got wind turbines on her property that the electricity's leaving the state. If the little amazing thing that happened to me when we drove into Indiana and all of a sudden it ain't John Chapman's apple trees. By God, it's wind turbines, and it's wind turbines all through the Midwest, and they are creating not only energy but excess energy. But we just have to get it from point A to point B. And part of the reason that electricity consumption isn't what it was in the 70s in California is not because there's less people, but because they actively incentivized solar. You know, and I think about Brother Albert up there in Wisconsin saying, you know, I want a program where, you know, you look around any neighborhood and there's six work crews putting solar panels on roofs. I mean, this is not science fiction. This isn't even sending somebody to the moon, let alone Mars, David.
Yeah, that is the problem, though, getting the investment money up to levels where it's where we can go from state to state to state and get it up and running. And I see, I just read an article about how Seattle's Green Projects is falling through, and that was disappointing to hear.
Jesus.
You know, missteps in funding and areas like that. And that goes back to what I was saying, how there's going to be a lot of states that are never going to see their dream come true. Like I always mention on this program, you're going to have bastions in this world. Bastions and pockets.
Yeah, little Logan's Run bubble cities.
Right. No place is going to be a utopia. So many people are going to be goddamn suffering, and they will continue to suffer throughout time. As long as we increase the population and keep it going up and up and up, and that's just the way it works. But you have to, but that's why we have to have those bastions for examples that we can set the trend for, that we can set the precedent for. We need to have those, and that's why, you know, we need to start building them now. We can't wait 10 years and 20 years, 30 years, and the more and more wars that we start. Is the more and more funding that gets diverted from these types of projects, the more and more wasteful spending, true wasteful spending. Education is not wasteful spending. Government assistance is not wasteful spending. What's wasteful spending is anything that wastes a life.
Right. Like, you know, welfare for coal companies.
Right. Welfare for coal companies.
Who are directly responsible for the death of in excess of 40,000 innocent Americans every year. You know, you work for Alpha Energy. Well, I'm glad you feel good. I'm keeping the lights on in America. But you know what? You're also engaged in killing 17-year-old high school football players in Ohio. You know, don't say that I'm mean because I pointed out, you know, reality is reality. Reality spoken here.
Right.
When you go home and you say, honey, I brought you the new bulbs for your tanning bed today because I blowed up another mountain. You know, she can come and give you a big old kiss or whatever it is she's going to give you, but you also helping kill people.
I have to ask this. How much of a problem do you think it is now that we have the contracts in the works, so to speak, for the natural gas pipelines all over the goddamn United States now? How bad is that, do you think, for solar in terms of competition?
How bad is it for the local methadone clinic when the price of heroin drops?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not trying to, I'm answering a question with a question, but it's the same thing. And see, David, that's, you know, my head's just weird, a weird place, and I think about this crap, but
right.
I have to try. I have to try to think out 100 years, 200 years. You know, just today on my Kindle, because I saw this recommendation on Bart Cop, and I went through his little portal, so he'll get, you know, 7.3958 cents on the purchase. Mm-hmm. There's a new biography of David Crockett.
I heard about this. I watched the Daily Show segment on him, on the interview.
It looked pretty interesting, didn't it?
Really interesting guy, yeah.
So I got me the book because, you know, lo and behold, I was toddling around Tennessee this week, And like I said, I drove by the exit to the David Crockett birthplace. And down there around Lawrenceburg, Tennessee, right up north of where I was born and raised, is his house.
Mm-hmm.
And if you understand that this man was a lone voice in the wilderness, or Congress, but I repeat myself, calling for Andrew Jackson not to commit genocide against the Indians, and that Jackson did it anyway, and that's part of the reason that Crockett winds up with a sword through his guts at the Alamo, you want to learn about this guy. But again, this is a guy who died in 1836, okay? And in 2001, every bit of a, you know, you and me and math on the fly, every bit of 170 years plus since the guy died, and somebody's still finding out enough information to write a bio about him. If you go back and you read the classics about, you know, where Suetonius is writing about Caesar and about Augustus, you know, that's 150 years, 200 years, I can't remember which, after those guys are dead. And then there's Plutarch and there was big chunks of time between them and their subjects. And God only knows the guys who were writing about Alexander.
Right.
So I think in terms of, one, what is the society going, what is the culture going to look like in 200 years? Two, what will they say about us now? And if you get the notion that the historians are going to say anything but that we were a bunch of jackasses who screwed them, because they're going to be mad at us.
Yeah.
Then I think you're deluding yourself. Because 100 years from now, they're going to look back at us. And they're going to, you know, they're not going to look back like we look back at the people in, who were trying to deal with the slavery issue before the Civil War and say, well, you know, it certainly was an intractable problem and nobody had the right answer and they wound up having a war.
Mm.
They're going to look at us and say they had the answers right in front of their faces. And they didn't even have the courage to embrace them. They could have saved, you know, and I don't know, maybe this is the historian M4619 on planet Borlap 12.
Mm-hmm.
Who might have been able to grow up on Earth except for the fact that, you know, the planet done got ruined. And they're going to hate us. And, you know, I don't like being hated by anybody. I don't like being hated by people in the present, and I certainly don't want to be hated by people in the future.
It's interesting you bring up the Kindle parallel, because I was just reading an article from Forbes, and they say the U.S. has lost or is on the verge, now check this out, of losing its ability to develop and manufacture a slew of high-tech products. Amazon's Kindle 2 couldn't be made in the U.S., even if Amazon wanted to. One, the flex circuit connectors are made in China because the U.S. supplier base migrated to Asia. Two, the electrophoretic display is made in Taiwan because the expertise developed from producing flat panel LCDs migrated to Asia with semiconductor manufacturing. Three, the highly polished injection molded case is made in China because the U.S. supplier base eroded as the manufacturer of toys, consumers, electronics, and computers migrated to China. Four, the wireless card is made in South Korea because that country became a center for making mobile phone components and handsets. Five, the controller board is made in China because U.S. companies long ago transferred manufacture of printed circuit boards to Asia. And six, the lithium polymer battery is made in China because battery development and manufacturing migrated to China along with the development and manufacture of consumer electronics and notebook computers.
What's to take issue with?
Nothing's to take issue with. It's the parallels of the fact that all of this stuff has migrated, that we can't have this Kindle being made in the U.S.
Right. No, and by God, our iPads have to be made by people who stand on their feet for 12 hours a day, are not allowed to speak to each other, and commit suicide whenever they get the chance.
And this goes back to the fact is that. Well, surely we had bigger challenges when we were just starting this country. And the issue of just saying, well, we can't manufacture, we can't make. I mean, it starts with a hammer and some nails, in my opinion.
No, I think you're right.
I mean, that's the thing.
But we need the kind of intellectual curiosity and, frankly, patriotic pride that went into the moon program.
Mm.
We need to talk about, for instance, Grid 2.0 like we talked about getting to the moon. We need to talk about green energy like we talked about getting to the moon, like we talked about winning World War II. Because this is a war we're waging with ourselves for our own souls, isn't it, David?
They need to give a green energy contract to that 11-year-old kid who figured out the Fibonacci sequence for solar energy that would be more effective.
Oh, I got to see that.
That story.
No, I got to see that. You got to send me that.
I will send you that.
I love the Fibonacci sequence.
But I mean, that's the point. The point is we need to get away from. We can't every time we hear that. And we need to constantly ask why not, and then we give historical reference points why it's all possible. But I mean the point is that what we're looking at right now is pretty darn challenging and tough. But there are people who don't even have. I'll give you this example. There are people in what was that? I was watching the thing on Ethiopia. And black gold. They were talking about the coffee business. And they have tent cities set up where you take your child if he's dying of hunger. And all the doctors can do is this. This is the hope and change that they're facing. All the doctors can do, ladies and gentlemen, is hang that child on that hanger. And if he doesn't weigh a certain amount, he's not going in the hospital tent. Even if he's dying of starvation.
Jesus.
And that is where we are at. And that is our future as well. And that's why we have to be constantly reminded.
And that's going to spread.
Right now, people would kill for. Right where we are right now, Bob, people would kill for right
now. Yeah. And yet, because, I have to reiterate that it is good for me to get out of the house once in a while.
Yeah.
I got to drive around and look at stuff. Because, again, things that don't matter to other people matter to me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I just got done driving all over the south, the central, what I call the central south. And as I drove toward home, I saw, now granted, it's no Illinois, it's no Kansas, but I saw vast, vast acres under cultivation for corn, okay?
Right.
And this time of year, the corn should still be pretty much green. I can't tell you how many acres of corn that were slap burnt up, David. Burnt up.
Right.
It's August, not October. And they were burnt up because of heat and drought. That is not a harbinger of good times yet to come for this country.
It definitely isn't. And you know, I was watching a book review on Book TV about the origins of Woodstock, and they were talking about all of the complications. The co-founder was talking about all the complications that they had, and he said that through it all, they just never gave up. Through it all, they just never gave up through the festival. They had so many people try to run them out of different towns. They had to scout different locations. And if it wasn't for this one farmer who just said, why not? Let's have it here. He was open-minded. He was an independent. I guess he was a Dwight Eisenhower Republican. Woodstock wouldn't have happened. And that's what we should keep to. Keep to why not, and we should keep looking for those few people that are left on the planet. And they'll always be there. Birch is going to be long and hard. And that's why we have to switch from why not and stop using can't.
Right, but of course you understand that the teabaggers and their ilk are the party of can't.
Yeah, I know.
Maybe it's time for us to get it tattooed in reverse on our foreheads. What Robert F. Kennedy said: some people see things as they are and ask why. I see things as they could be and ask why not.
Hmm. Yeah, that's definitely a quote to live by. And I do think, you know, when you look at the bigger picture of where we are at right now, all I have to say is this. I just have to say this. You have, number one, you have internet, and number two, your lights are on, and you have food in your refrigerator. Those are three things that people would kill for on 80% of this planet. Always remember that.
Jesus, that's a little dose of perspective that's well worth the offering. Thank you very much, David.
All right, Bob. And for those people who haven't donated, you should donate and contribute to the Head On Radio. And let's keep the conversation going. If you haven't called in yet, the number is 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. So call in right now. And
operators are standing by. Well, one of them is.
Yeah, so, you know, for anyone who is nervous about calling in, you should call in if you have something to say and you need something to say, because it'll help you. It's therapy, and it'll be therapy for others.
I couldn't agree more, and you said it better.
All right, then. We'll have to talk later about this Anthony Bourdain episode. I'm looking forward to it.
Me too. And by the way, you've got to, before you go, this came from omg!@yahoo.com. It's omg.yahoo.com.
Mm-hmm.
Fight, fight. Paula Deen tells Anthony Bourdain to get a life.
I saw that.
Yeah, I don't think she wants in this one.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous, the fact that what people will do for media attention.
And, you know, all Bourdain did was point out the fact that she will go out and prostitute herself for any corporate food producer that whose check clears. And you know what? You know what? Maybe that's okay, because I think, yeah, I think when she was, like, desperately poor, you know, there are some prostitutes out there who will do it for, like, Coke. I think when she was desperately poor at one point, Paula Deen was out there hooking for tubs of lard.
Well, you know, before I go, I hope Bruce Willis isn't watching, and he's an Anthony Bourdain fan, because that's going to be awkward watching that little bit. Well, Bob, as always, it's great to have a discussion and dialogue with you, and new callers. I have thrown the gauntlet down, and I welcome you to call in and get a new caller.
And they've been showing up.
Yeah,
I think it's working. I think it's working, David.
Well, good. Let's keep it going.
All right. See you, David. Bye now.
All right. Later, Bob.
Among other things, he started out as our pop culture correspondent, but, you know, it's really cool that you know, everybody who comes to this conversation usually comes with one idea and winds up expanding into a, you know, just all over. And it's, oh, God, it's cool. I mean, it's truly fascinating and energizing to behold. So, you know, we've never lost a caller yet. Nobody's fainted. Nobody's had to dial 911 or run for the smelling salts. You'll be okay. And it's easy to dial, and you know, you'll get on the program. You got to be patient, because this is conversation radio. You might have to wait a while, but you will get your say if you're able to stick around. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Brother Luke.
Well, I had to call in tonight because, like I say, it's Moran Monday, and I found, I think, the biggest Moran in the last week that I just had to call it in on.
Oh, goody, especially if it's one I missed.
Oh, no, you caught this one. This had to be the group over at Faux News. When you have the guy who's Eric Bowling, who decides to ask the question, is Warren Buffett a total socialist?
The stupid.
And, you know,
it hurts.
Well, the thing is, the thing to watch, though, is Thursday night's Jon Stewart, the first 10 minutes or so of his show, where he did the World of Class Warfare, and he went through and showed that first 10 minutes is just golden. It really was.
Well, I was out of the loop. In fact, I don't think I was anywhere near a TV Thursday evening, so I'm going to have to go back and find it.
Go ahead and find it. You'll like that one. Although, let's see, a couple other things we've got going on now. Now that apparently the new idea for the GOP is, we're going to have open town meetings, but you have to pay to ask questions.
Oh, God, I saw that. Yeah, if you want to ask Paul Ryan a question, it's $15 to you, or 30 or something.
But what it is, instead of going through the old days, like, you know, when they used to go through the League of Women Voters or whatever, now they're hiring third parties now to manage the open town meetings.
Yeah, because of all those scary voters.
Well, I'll say they're scared now of getting the same treatment that the teabaggers did to the Democrats a couple of years ago. You know, some of these meetings they've had, the people have shown up to ask questions, and it's the ones that the GOPers don't want to answer.
Yeah, and that's the thing. They're afraid of their own now.
I know. Well, the other one was, did you see this thing with, I guess you're up in that area, you were talking about your trip, with Kasich up in Ohio, where now he's trying to, oh, I want to make a deal with you people, even though we screwed you over last year, because you all apparently have got enough votes to repeal the law I passed this year. That whole thing about his union busting thing, that apparently up in Ohio, the numbers are like 70% are like, you know, let us vote on it, we'll kill that. And Kasich and his friend, his GOP ran it through the Ohio legislature. Now they're saying, no, we want to talk to you all about it. We want to have a discussion. If you all just go ahead and take that off the ballot. Really?
Yeah. Trust me.
I like the response they gave to it. They said, well, why don't you go ahead and you just go ahead and you and your Republican friends go ahead and neutralize it. Dismiss it. And then we'll talk. Until then, it stays on the ballot. So they're having fun with
it. Well, it sounds like they've at least got the whole idea of don't trust them till you see the reds of their eyes down.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you a minute ago, Dave, were talking about that. We had one down here last week. National Science Foundation has awarded UT a $18 million grant to NSF, the Department of Energy, studying on the new grid update, the 2.0 thing.
Well, that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. So they're going to work.
You got to wonder how the teabaggers are going to feel about that. And, you know, I mean, you're
saying money for stuff we can't even see. It's just out there.
You're going to, you know, UT sits there in the foothills of the Smokies in East Tennessee. And some of that can be culture changing, Luke.
I know.
If it's born there, it might get adopted there.
Hey, you said you were up in Kentucky. Did you see the story? I sent it to you last week, the thing about the Noah's Ark exhibit.
Oh, dear God. Yeah.
They want to put up another one of those up there. Of course, wanting the state to give them a whole bunch of breaks and everything for it. And this one, they said, this one ain't even going to be partial. This one's going to be totally full-sized.
And, yeah, as you're running north on I-65, you go through an area called Cave City, Kentucky. And right by the roadside, there's a life-sized, I guess he's concrete, or maybe he's fiberglass, maybe he's like that, the Butter Jesus in Ohio. But it's a life-sized Tyrannosaurus Rex, and it's painted like a tiger. It's orange with black stripes. And the sign says, you know, you just missed us, you know, dinosaur land at Kentucky Down Under or something like that, and you got,
you know, got the Flintstone statue sitting on the saddle on top of him?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, you got a tiger-striped Tyrannosaur there. You know, maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm feeling pretty good about missing it.
Yeah, there's some of these things when you see this, you're just kind of going, you know, somebody in the state has to have brain activity. Somebody, come on, wake up. You know, did y'all turn it off and nobody paid attention to what's going on today? It's like, God.
Oh, it's just, it's mind-blowing. And well, like I said, if we had any sense about us, Luke, we'd find us a generous so-called liberal billionaire, and we would present plans and everything for a humanist theme park right next door to the Ark Park.
Oh yeah, but you're,
and and demand the same tax breaks, and use the same phony baloney statistics.
I was going to say, Bob, you know that can't happen. No, 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 no.
Well, you know, because atheism's a religion, and we can't be endorsing no religions.
It's one of those things, you're just sitting there going, you know, sometimes you just, you're really just so sad that George Carlin's gone.
Yeah, but, you know, in going through, Kentucky's just so damn beautiful. And I'm driving through there, and I'm thinking, you know, can't you guys just stick to what you do good? You know, stick to the bourbon and the damned horse racing.
There's some of this stuff, you know, it's like, you just remember the old place Carlin used to say, the things now that Bill Maher's saying, and you know what I mean? You're just kind of sitting there looking at some of this stuff just going, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I fell in love with a new phrase. I laughed out loud when I read it. Every so often, and you should look for this guy, he's really good. I guess he's printed in the Lexington paper, and our buddy Dennis in Kentucky will send me his columns every now and then. His name's Larry Webster, and he's an attorney. He's a lawyer from Pikeville.
Okay.
And he's got this character he writes about called Tyrod. you know, anybody named Tyrod, you know, Luke, come on, you know what Tyrod's going to be about. And there was a reference in this past column this past weekend to, the other night, Tyrod drank a little too much Eastern Kentucky liquid folk art. Liquid folk art. I just fell in love with that. Makes you feel a whole lot better about it. No, hey, Hooch, that's liquid folk art. Hey, bring me a quilt.
Oh, I meant to say, have you seen this thing? Apparently, that still there's this one or two of these PIs in the phone hacking thing are now being under orders that they're going to have to start revealing who hired them and who they hired them to cut to spy on.
The whole Rupert Murdoch thing is getting uglier by the minute. And I just can't help. I can't.
He's ready to throw the son under the bus.
Did you hear the tape that came out of the employees taking down what was her name, Rebecca Brooks?
Yeah.
Taking her down for saying that the son was a toxic brand. Or, I'm sorry, News of the World, whichever it was. Yeah, News of the World.
Yeah.
Well, Rupert may be getting sued by every person who got canned in that debacle because with all of that toxic business, he made them, even though they were blameless, he made them unemployable. That could be very expensive.
Oh, I know. But
one hopes at least.
But it's just one of those things sometimes with this stuff. You're just sitting there going, and the fun part now is sitting here watching Rick Perry. And you're just sitting there going, oh, God, I'm just so sad Molly Ovitz is gone.
Don't you?
She would just be having the hoot pit on this one.
You know what? This may be, you know, depending on how one feels about an afterlife, Luke, this may be Molly's, this may be some of Molly's best work. No, really.
She's up there leading the party.
Really, your almightiness. Can you get him to say that...
Let's hang him. Hang him high.
That Ben Bernanke should be hanged. Could you do that? No. Really, Molly? You think it'd be... Dang, that red hair still looks good. It is done.
Because there
ain't any let-up in it, Luke.
Oh, no. Well, the fun part of this for us... and. I say fun, and I don't mean it really in that way, but it's just fun to watch Karl Rove and these others who really do not like Rick Perry just having a fit over all this stuff. And it's, you know, it's just so much fun to watch.
Well, that's why I went into that whole theory about why John Huntsman is in the race.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, I still think the same thing about Bachman. I think she's in there so Palin will look almost sane.
That's possible, but John Huntsman has the potential to screw the whole lot of them. To keep Romney from winning, and to literally put a Perry or a Bachman up against Obama. And at the risk of, you know, having to eat my words and say something like, oh my God, what have we done? On the day after the election in 2012, I gotta side with Sandra on this one.
Well, but you know,
I mean, if you put Rick Perry or Michelle Bachman up against a guy who tells jokes at the same time that he has ordered the summary execution of Osama bin Laden.
I know, but you know, it's like, you know, the one thing that the. Of course, our for-profit media won't touch the story a whole lot, is the fact of watching how Rick Perry and Michelle Bachman and Sarah Palin are really, if you really want to get into the religion part of it, how we don't see them ever, you ever hear the for-profit media mention a whole lot about dominionism.
I think it's coming along. I think it may become, because you're seeing more actual coverage of Rick Perry from the standpoint of actual journalism, and, you know, I feel real funny saying that, but there's more actual for-profit media coverage of what a damn dangerous, devil-eyed loon that man is.
Well, part of the story is these are the same people that got walked over by Rove and the Bush machine.
Well, yeah, and that's...
They're going, we ain't going to do this again.
Well, it may not be so much that as it is the fact that they did get walked over by the Rove Bush machine. And once Rick Perry began dissing George Bush, you know, some calls may have been made. Because
I know.
George Bush is a mean, pig-eyed, little vindictive bastard.
Hey, Mama's genetics are still in there.
Yeah. And Mama's still alive. You know, she may be the one calling and screaming at him. George, you do something about that, Perry. I'll not have him besmirching our good family's name. George, do you remember when I potty trained you at gunpoint, George? It can happen again.
Hey, you know who she to this day she still reminds me of?
Quaker Oats Man?
The most evil character in movie history.
Mother Bates?
Candidate Mom.
Who?
Angela Lansbury.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. Okay. She's right up there with Mother Bates. Maybe Babs Bush is a combination of Angela Lansbury, candidate mom, and Mother Bates.
Because I tell you what, I still think that's one of the most evil characters.
Oh, she was.
In all the movies. I mean, she makes Darth Vader look like he ain't trying.
And yet she went on to be such a sweetheart in Murder, She Wrote. Yeah.
But that's why she's such a good actress. But, hey, let me get off here.
All right, we'll talk to you later, Luke. Good hearing from you, brother.
All right, bud.
Bye now. Off in the hills of East Tennessee, that's brother Luke.
Norman? Georgie?
Same, right? Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Brother Cossack.
How you doing?
You know, I'm happy to be home. I really am.
Oh, good.
I mean, it was a good trip and a necessary trip, but when it's a weeknight and I'm not behind the microphone, I feel like something's wrong.
You're Johnson.
Yeah, I do.
As do we, when you're not around.
Yeah, I had some nice communications along those lines, and they are very pleasant to receive.
Yeah, we're all sitting here scratching around looking for a fix.
Not another damn rerun.
Exactly.
Well, you know, someday I'll be fabulously wealthy, and no, I won't. Had John not been tied up, he would have gladly filled in, but. You know, people work and earn and livings at the same time we're doing this stuff.
Oh, well. Why don't you get George Soros to shake a few...
Don't make me reach through this, reach through these inner tubes. I will pull this internet over if you keep this stuff up, Cossack.
You know, that kind of reminds me. Aren't the teabaggers and the whole religious right and everything, aren't they so worked up about the children? It's always, you know, the children, won't someone think of
the poor
children?
Little fetuses.
Yeah. And yet, they're the very ones that have no problem whatsoever trashing the entire God-blessed world to hand over to their children.
Yeah. Well, at the same time, remember, and this, you know, this sort of broke while I was on the road, that little New York Times editorial about the polling data.
Uh-huh.
Did you catch this?
No.
They polled, you know, a whole bunch of ordinary folks, and the results were rather surprising. It turns out that in America, the average American who was polled, the average American has a lower opinion of, well, let's put it this way. The average American has a higher opinion of gay people. The average American has a higher opinion of atheists. The average American has a higher opinion of liberals. The average American has a higher opinion of Muslims than they do of teabaggers and right-wing religion industry goons. No kidding. No kidding. The two lowest on the entire list of who do you hate in this poll, the two bottom most positions were held, and I don't mean it was even close, were held by teabaggers and right-wing evangelical Christians. And that gave that was sort of uplifting.
Think about it. We've given used car salesmen a good name.
Well, they think better of used car salesmen. Jesus, Cossack, they think better of lawyers.
Oh God.
So
well,
yeah, you get wow. You know.
In our increasingly litigious society, as people get more exposure, personal exposure to lawyers, they find out what a boon they really are.
Well, I mean, look at what Sandra brought up. Look at this attorney general in New York, Eric Schneiderman. Now, Sandra gave out the number. I hope everybody wrote it down. If you didn't, download the program and go get it again. Call and give that guy an attaboy. For standing up to these thug-ass banks. You know, that's, you know, for everybody who likes to tell jokes on lawyers, you know, why won't a shark eat a lawyer? Professional courtesy. Ho, that's funny. For everybody who likes to tell those, let's remember that the people who are out there saving people's homes to the extent that they can be saved, who are protecting them against these predatory banksters, you know, that ain't a bunch of Sunday school teachers. That's lawyers. Mean ones.
Yep. Well, did you read the article by Dave Lindorf about his encounters with the legal system?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And it's a very good point. If he wasn't middle class, if he didn't have enough money to hire a lawyer, his kid would be in jail, in prison.
Yeah.
Have a nice day. And with the average poor person, if they get nailed for something like that, it's only a traffic ticket. Yeah, but it ends up with you losing your car, your insurance, your ability to get to work. All those nice little things.
Well, yeah, let's just remember that the criminal law in most states is geared toward tormenting poor, ignorant people. You know, there's that ancient maxim, Cossack, ignorantia juris non excusat.
Right.
Ignorance of the law does not excuse. Ignorance of the law is no excuse.
Cool.
And, okay, sure, but that doesn't go far enough. Because in this country, what we punish is not ignorance of the law. What we punish, Cossack, is ignorance of the world. You know, when you live in a country that prizes its ability to punish you over its ability to educate you, then you are going to have a so-called criminal justice system that is anything but.
Criminal just us.
Yeah. And a for-profit prison industry? Excuse me? You know, we gotta fill them beds. You know, if you ask a cop in a roller if he has a monthly quota of tickets to write? Well, hell no, I ain't got no quota. I'm just enforcing the law.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? The biggest quota in the entire United States is the number of available beds in for-profit prisons.
Correct.
And we know who we like to put most in those beds.
Yep. Dark-hued, ill-educated, whether white or dark-hued, doesn't matter.
Yeah, because it's not like we were going to give them a job anyway. It's not like they were going to be afforded the ability to have a job. Remember the young, brilliant, the young lady of color in Arkansas who wasn't allowed to be sole valedictorian because it'd create a real mess.
Yeah.
Because the white folks would be shocked that they wasn't the smartest. And yet we manifest some degree of surprise. You know, both Ron and Raleigh and Sandra picked up on that guy in the Inglewood, California the constituent meeting. He holds up his knapsack and his backpack and says, "This is my world." 6 years ago, I was driving a Porsche 911.
Living in a mansion.
Yeah.
And now?
His world is on his back. And there is very little opportunity for him to ever get back to where he was, if there is any opportunity at all.
No. Like I said, Obama's going to have a hard time dealing with things like that. Hence the situation is going to be very difficult for him to deal with.
If he even cares to.
Well, I don't think he does. You know, people are saying, "Oh, just you wait until the second term when he doesn't have to be beholden to anybody." Oh, God.
Yeah. See, that's another argument I think in favor of eliminating the term limit on the presidency. I don't like having people in office who are utterly unbeholden to even the farce of voting.
Right.
You know what I'm getting at?
Oh, yeah. Well, and, you know, people keep on saying, "Well, what are you going to do? You going to vote for some Republican for president?" No, I'm not going to vote. Simple as that.
Well, no, I'm thinking seriously about sitting out the primary. You know, maybe there will be somebody running for office that I'll want to cast a vote to. And you know what? That means just as much. I go, I vote, I leave the presidency blank. Yeah. I'll show up as a voter, but I won't be a voter for any of the candidates running.
Well, you've heard they're floating trial balloons about perhaps running Trump in the primary. Hell, I'll vote for him.
Yeah, I mean, why not?
I mean, he may have his problems, but Christ, to primary Obama, why not? That might get his attention partially.
And that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah. I mean, I'd just be happy if we got the Obama that was promised to us.
Well, but I don't necessarily know that he promised it. I think we heard him promise it, but we were listening to the little voice inside our aching little heads. You know, because this is the guy who told us, after all, that Afghanistan was the right war.
Oh, yeah. But he sure as hell didn't say a damn thing about Libya. He sure didn't say anything about Yemen. He didn't say anything about Pakistan. And like everybody is so much enamored of Obama's wasting Osama. I wouldn't be, you know, that's not something I'm really particularly that fond of. Anybody can be assassinated. Anybody. Given sufficient resources. But the fact that...
No, it doesn't impress me, but by God, the cold-blooded way that he did it, if I was on the other side, you know, that guy can smile in your face and, well...
And split your throat. But that's the whole thing. Since he's already said in as many words that he retains upon himself the authority to murder anyone, including Americans, that he doesn't like, that should give you pause.
Yeah, that's a little sober up.
Yeah. Now, that's not the Hopi changey I was thinking about.
No, nor I. Well, Cossack, good to hear from you, brother.
Good to hear from you, Bob.
And we will talk soon.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Take care.
All right. Bye now.
Night-night.
From behind the cornbread curtain in the wilds of North Florida, that's our buddy the Cossack. Texas Betsy wants to know, and what do you have against Sunday school teachers? You talk so kindly of the little old ladies with the blue hair in the basement. Well, I added the blue hair. You talk so kindly of the little of old ladies in the basement when you were a child. Signed, Betsy, a Hebrew school teacher. I have nothing against Sunday school teachers. Especially the ones that are telling the basic rules of society to the little children who probably need a little reinforcement that way. Because down in the basement of the Baptist church, at least, they tell you all the basic decent stuff. You know, Jesus loves you. You love each other. You all love Jesus. It's going to work out. You have to go upstairs to get the nasty part. But the fact of the matter is, it takes mean, determined lawyers to protect the rights of people who otherwise would have no status and no ability to challenge power. And the lawyers who do that, I don't begrudge them a damn dime. In fact, I like for them to like being rich, because that makes them like taking apart these abusive bastards a little bit more. It, in many ways, it's the only hope we have, and it's proven that it's the only hope we have by virtue of the fact that the right wing so despises so-called trial lawyers. I remember when George H.W. Bush, you know, Pappy, spoke so disparagingly of tasseled loafers wearing trial lawyers. The hell's tasseled loafers got to do with it? What are you wearing, George? Penny loafers? Opera pumps? What? Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. This is Grant from Portland.
Hey, Grant. What's happening, man?
Well, David kind of stirred my pot. Got me thinking. I agree with him, you know, about future generations. I think if we... Let's take an inventory of what... I'm going to make the statement first. If we don't use what we have in our hand, I think we will be despised. But let's inventory a little bit of what we actually have in our hands. You know, you talk about the grid 2.0. You know, I want you to find some encouragement in this, in that the experiments with high-voltage DC are already prototyped and happening. So we have the science. We have the prototypes, and they're getting field data right now. I don't know if you knew that or not.
No.
Hello?
No.
Oh.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's occurring right now. So what you do is you jack up, you use DC, not AC, but you jack the voltage way up. And your losses are actually less than using conventional AC for long-distance transmission. And my uncle was an operator for some time on a power station. And they had been experimenting with that even decades ago, at least a decade ago. But they have a lot of field data now, and it looks like it's a nearly in-hand option. And so I just wanted to let you know that that's going on out there, for one thing.
And, you know, I still say that it needs to go on a Manhattan Project, invasion of Europe, go to the moon level, Grant.
I'm getting to that. I'll get to that. But I just wanted to kind of at least let's do the short list, you know. So we have the infrastructure. I mean, we have basically the desert of the Southwest. Take your pick, solar thermal, solar voltaic, at certain points wind. You know, and all the energy we could ever consume, basically, coming out of there. And that's just if you decided to do a monolithic, you know, Manhattan-style project out there. But I think what's probably more likely, more practical, and more doable is just have a distributed little, you know, the generation grid all over the damn place. You know, just, you know, every nook and cranny has got a solar panel or a windmill or something like that. It's probably what's going to happen because of the next thing I'm going to talk about, which is, you know, we have, I think, in our hand, and I didn't get to all the other various things, but I think we have in our hand all the science, all the prototypes, everything's ready to go. What we don't have is an investor class with some balls and some brains. I'm sorry. That's what I see.
Or, let's examine this for a minute, Grant. Could it be that that investor class has not yet been sufficiently tickled on its little soft white underbelly greed spot? Yet you can't just prove to these bastards that it's profitable. You have to prove to them that it will satisfy. Well, you know, when the Spanish,
my free 20%, basically.
Right, when the Spanish conquered Mexico, the conquistadores told the Mexica people and the other peoples whom they conquered and enslaved and murdered, they told them, "We have a disease of the heart, and it can only be cured by pure gold." Well, that's your investor class. They have a disease of the heart, and it can only be cured with pure gold. And they're not happy making a profit or altering the future for the benefit of all mankind or any of that altruistic horse shit, Grant. They want to know that they're going to be rich. We're going to be rich, 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 richer than rich. We're going to be richer than richer. We're not going to be able to count how rich we're going to be. And when you get these green technologies to the point that these greed heads can look at them and say, "Oh, Jesus, this is going to be embarrassing how rich we're going to be," then it'll happen.
Well, I tell you what, that's a narrative I can get on board with. You know, I can say that's accurate to a very large degree. But fortunately for the human race, they're not the only pieces in the picture. What I think I'm going to try to do is zig while those assholes zag. I'm going to try and lower the cost of installation and the affordability of it to kickstart. I'm thinking that when the numbers get right, then it becomes appealing to the entrepreneurs with little balls and their eyes open. And you'll see people wanting to get increasingly more and more a piece of it, I think. I think that's sort of a low road approach, but I think that's what I see is going to actually happen. And it's because, you know, you can't get your free 20% right out the bat, you know, and it's just not going to attract those people. And, you know, in some ways, kind of choosy about the company I keep in my commercial affairs. And actually, that's just fine. Those assholes, I'm sorry, I mean, for my business interests, those fuckers are not invited. You see?
Yeah, it's Reverbo's bus. We're going to close the door and leave. We've waited long enough.
Yeah. And I was thinking, and I also wanted to say it, when it comes to all this stuff, let me move back up. My head goes 1,000 directions. Back, oh gosh, maybe a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, when when Montel was making his stab at Air America,
mm-hmm.
he made a comment about clean energy that really irked me. You know, and he was talking like one of these, you know, 401kers, you know, well, it's just not viable, blah, 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 blah. And I emailed him and I said, "Look, dude, here's the story. We, the poor, are going to have energy independence. With or without the investor class. It's going to happen. We want it. Now, you can make it go faster by getting out your checkbook, but we are going to have it." And that's that. And I've stuck with that, and I'm seeing it happen.
Well, I tell you what, I agree with that sentiment.
I mean, here's the thing. After all this stuff, and I take in all this kind of we can't, we won't, we're on our own, in a way. The have-nots, We're just kind of on our own to do this. Ourselves, for each other, no matter what happens. Don't expect the government to invest in it. We know who has the talent and grip on them. Don't expect big money to help, because if they coulda, they woulda, they didn't, they don't want it. It's that simple. And so we got to figure out how to do this on milk money. And that's just the way it is. Okay? That's how I see it. And you know what, though?
Well, you know what? The guy, and that's the funny, that's the funny thing, that's the funny thing, Grant. The guy who figures out, I mean, do you remember that story that came out, a year, 2 years ago about the guy who invented the solar oven that would work without electricity, in the most barren parts of Africa? And you could cut disease by making sure food was appropriately cooked, and you were no longer deforesting anything. And the thing cost about $4.
Yep.
The guy who invents that is going to get to be the guy or woman who becomes so embarrassingly wealthy they don't know what to do with themselves. The guy who makes it possible to do energy independence on milk money is gonna, there'll be a guy who did that prize that'll make the Nobel Prize look like nothing. Chump change.
I think you're partially correct. The guy who figures it out is gonna benefit the human condition immensely. But frankly, as I assess the, how do I say this, patrician constellations of power, okay, it's going to have to be pretty much on the QT and just happen, because as soon as one of these guys shows up on the scope, I think they're just going to get, you know, bumped around, bumped off, co-opted, or pushed aside. You know, you've got an immensely powerful fossil fuel industry that must be paranoid in its citadel right now, because it knows it's, you know, there's all this pressure for it to change, clean up, you know, and it makes war on all regulatory constraints. You know, it's just bellicose at its core, you know, to everything.
You're absolutely right. We got to continue this discussion, Grant. I'm sorry I got to you so late, but we need to continue this discussion right now. I got to get out of here because Rick Smith's right, waiting to go.
All right, I'll call back.
All right, see you, Grant.
Hey, bye.
Bye. Great Moran Monday, everybody. A warning. I got a warning from Randall. Watch the clock, Bob. Yep, it's time. Yep, time to get out of here. Thanks, everybody, all of you who make the program go and make it all work, and keep the lights on. Thank you. Someday we'll be keeping the lights on with the power of the sun and not some blown up mountain. It will happen. In the meantime, I'll look for you again. Well, listen for you, I guess, tomorrow night. Thanks to our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky. And thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy, Reverbo, our op-ed columnist, my head writer and spiritual advisor, the high priest of ribs, David in Tennessee. Thank you all. Thank you, John Fox, our chief engineer. Thank you, Ben Birch, who makes it all go at whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest